And here we go, off and running on this 20th day of October 2021. This is the Horn Head On Live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to also be part of the Merry Wacky Zany real-time multimedia extravaganza. It is the Horn chat room. If you pop by right now, this very instant, if you're listening live, you'll be immediately greeted by early arrivers Anatole and Otto Deschott and Squeaky, and capably moderated, or at least somewhat capably moderated. Well, barely moderated at all by yours truly. Hi, I'm Robin. It is Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn, and every program here at the Horn, even Prayer Meeting Wednesdays, begin with gratitude, and this program is no different. So, as a consequence, we send out thanks this evening to Armand. Thank you, Armand. Thank you to Dr. John in New Mexico. Thank you to Ralphs. Thank you to Vincent. Thank you to Reverbo, the human guy. And thank you all for being partial sponsors of the program and helping to keep independent, liberal, progressive broadcasting on the air for, dang, a long time. Reminder, we'll be celebrating our birthday, the Horniversary, on this Friday on the front porch. At, well, celebrating, I mean, noisemakers. I mean, I'm a noisemaker. Wee! Okay. But yeah, that'll be our Horniversary. We'll celebrate it 2 days early since it falls on the 24th. Next year's, I suppose, will be on the on a Monday. So 16 years in this format, in excess of 18 years total. Yeah. Well, it's Prayer Meeting Wednesday, and the deacons will be passing the virtual heavy brass-bound, velvet-lined collection plate around this prayer meeting Wednesday evening in search of $1,240. That's how deep the hole is that we're in. It is not a record-setting hole, thank God. Well, or somebody or something. Thank y'all. Never mind. No, it's thank y'all. You are why the little miracles happen. Yes, indeed. So, thank you indeed. And we can, there is some good news because having been away from the community for a few days, our dear friend Charlene in Rogues Island, a founding member of the sorority of Leans, is back, and she has a challenge on the table. And thank you very kindly, Charlene, for that, to help help bring down the fundraising goal. To wit, there we go. $100 challenge, and if it's met this evening, Charlene will kick in another $100. Best from Rogues Island. So the Welcome Back Charlene challenge is on the table, and hopefully as the deacons pass the virtual plates, the virtual PayPal button will get a lot of presses, because that would take us down to 940 to go and keep us well underneath that $1,500 worst hole we've ever been in mark. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you so very much indeed. And thank you in advance to everybody who responds to it. So once again, it's a chance to triple, not double, your money. Your dollar becomes three, your five becomes 15, your 15 becomes 45, etc., up to $100. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you again. Quick COVID update. News just breaking. The Washington Post reporting that the FDA has authorized Moderna and Johnson & Johnson boosters, and has gone so far as to say, yes, you can mix and match. Because, in fact, we've got some empirical data in our own community that mixing and matching is not it's not a problem. The Post reports, millions more people in the United States will soon be able to receive an extra shot of any coronavirus vaccine, regardless of their initial vaccination, a flexibility that comes along with the authorization Wednesday of the Moderna and Johnson & Johnson booster shots by federal regulators. Good. Of course, I don't think it's going to, I mean, let's just be real. It's not going to have any impact on the spread necks and the mask holes and the COVIDiots because, well,
nothing's going to make them take that all dang darn doodle duck rack stacking. Shot nation.
Right. We go now to Florida for our evening Herman Cain Award winner, an individual who posted a swastika showing hands where the arms of the swastika are arms, and in the hands are syringes poking needles into the right. Yeah. If they were truly worried about new variants, the border would be closed, dumbass. And, yeah. A new mask has been released that will save countless lives, and a photograph of Nancy Pelosi with duct tape across her mouth. I once had a friend who grew up in China ask me why so many Americans watch the news. Confused, I asked, "What do you mean?" She responded, "Well, in China, no one watches the news because we all know it's propaganda. I guess Americans haven't figured that out yet." Among the moments that completely changed my paradigm on life, this was one of them, said our Herman Cain Award winner. The world is acting just like Pharaoh did. They fear the plagues but don't fear God. Big mistake. Mm-hmm. And let's see, a picture of like coal miners or something. Men like this are forced to work until they're 70 because the government is bringing more and more people like this, showing a picture of a family of Muslim immigrants. Nice. And so, there it is. I lost a true friend today from COVID. Prayers for the family and friends. I'm glad I got to see him at my party a few weeks ago. Well, maybe he caught the Rona at your party a few weeks ago, but, you know, it's the usual arc. I ain't going to get the shot. Nobody can make me wear a mask. I got, you dumb sheeple, I got the Rona. Fire up the prayer warriors. Jesus, do what I tell you to do. Heal him. He's dead. Go fund me. Time after time after time after time. But, oh well. It is prayer meeting Wednesday, and the little old blue-haired ladies and little old blue-haired men got busy in the kitchen. It was baked spaghetti tonight, which is just yum. You know, big old rectangular pans, and you make the spaghetti, mix it with the sauce, you cover it in mozzarella and parmesan, and into the oven, get the cheese all nice and golden brown, and it cuts nicely into squares, so that it can be placed conveniently along with the salad and the dressing and the garlic bread in the box. And the little old blue-haired ladies are just fantastic. It's, you know, this is a great time of year, at least hereabouts, for things like baked spaghetti. And so the little old blue-haired man trucked it all around town, and because it's all imaginary, and it was much enjoyed, imaginarily. Thank you, Ralphs. Ralphs just got us going on Charlene's Welcome Home Challenge, Welcome Back Challenge. So we got 90 bucks to go on that, and hopefully we'll knock that down in fairly short order. Thank you. Thank you, Ralph, so very much. What a day of fireworks today there in the Congress of the United States. Yeah, it was a busy day as the maggots came calling to the January 6th commission. Oh, yeah, this was some kind of fun. Jim Shorts Jordan showed up. It didn't work out well for old Jim Shorts. He's not the sharpest knife in the chandelier by any stretch of the imagination. Mm-mm, no. Didn't work out very well at all. It was a simple question. When did you talk to Nitwit Nero on January the 6th? Well, it's a simple question if you're inclined to do wacky shit like, oh, I don't know, tell the truth.
Well, if you could just clarify the record, was it before, during, or after the attack on the
I talked to the president after the attack.
So not before or during?
Right.
Okay, and you and you.
And I've been clear about that.
Well,
but here, let me ask you a question. You brought up January 6th.
My understanding is that you said to a reporter from Politico that you spoke to him during. So is now after the attack? Or you
during? No, I did not speak to the president during the attack.
So you admitted to speaking to the former president on January 6th, the same day you voted to overturn the election.
Ow. And it just got worse. Here's the trick, though. He started talking to the media pretty early on about what he didn't remember, Jim Shorts, about talking to the media. And 84 days later, this conversation, that took place. And he said, well, you know, I'd have to review my records. 84 days later, he either hasn't reviewed his records or ain't going to tell anybody what he found when he did. And then there's what happened with Representative Torres. Representative Torres was had a little bit of speechifying to do, understandably. And she didn't mince any words, because the maggots showed up and tried to obfuscate. And, well, let me ask you a question or two, little missy. No. Mm-mm. This happened.
People died. This is not about somebody being sexually assaulted or somebody paying to have sex with a young girl or somebody not...
Did I mention that she was speaking directly to Matt Gaetz? This isn't about somebody paying to have sex with a little girl. And she was speaking directly to Jim Shorts Jordan, too.
People died. This is not about somebody being sexually assaulted or somebody paying to have sex with a young girl or somebody not, protecting people that are under their jurisdiction. This is about our democracy.
Ow. Somebody hose Matt Gaetz and Jim Shorts down with a little solar cane, because they done been burnt. But it's a valid point. I mean, Jim Shorts Jordan was told about a doctor raping young men, young athletes, at The Ohio State University, and kind of looked the other way. And then there's Matt Gaetz, who really made a Venmo payment to a young girl for sex and left it out there for the public to see. That's something. Yeah. But that's not where it all ends. Oh, no. There's lots and lots and lots of this for this prayer meeting Wednesday. Jim Shorts Jordan. Oh, yeah. And then Jamie Raskin got after Matt. It just gates better. Hint, it didn't work out well for Matt Gaetz.
Hello, I'm Tiffany, and welcome to the Raw Report.
Yeah, that's, I hate it when the clip I want is embedded with other stuff. Let's blow past Tiffany. Here we go.
Start with basics. Do you accept that Joe Biden won the 2020 presidential election?
I accept that Joe Biden is the president.
Do you accept that he won the election by more than 7 million votes and defeated Donald Trump by 306 to 232 in the Electoral College, a margin that Donald Trump called a landslide when he beat Hillary Clinton by the same numbers?
I think that our election was uniquely polluted by these indiscriminate mail-in ballots. I think that this was the first time in America's history where the mailbox beat the ballot.
Okay, do you think there's any...
Wow. You know what? I hate to sound catty or anything like that, but... You might remember that Matt Gaetz brags about putting on his own makeup. And I'm not here to makeup shame or... Well, okay, I'm kind of makeup shaming. Because... needs a little help. Because apparently he's putting it on with a trowel. You want a light touch. It's something we all learn, Matt. You want a light touch with the makeup. The odd irony of foundation is that you want it to be there, but not look like it's there. No, that's not a color any human being actually. I'd say Matt looks like he's wearing a CoverGirl shade known as Band-Aid. Ugh. But how about that? He can't even admit that Joe Biden won the election. He knows Joe Biden won the election. We know he knows Joe Biden won the election. He knows we know. He knows Joe Biden won the election. But what he can't do is say it out loud. Because, well, if he did that, his God Emperor wouldn't like him anymore. He may have been on national television saying all of this, but he wasn't speaking to the American people. He was speaking to one viewer and one viewer only.
Any evidence that there was electoral corruption or fraud that materially altered the outcome of the presidential election, and where is that evidence?
I believe that had mail ballots not...
I believe for every drop of rain that falls, a maggot grows. No singing. We got to quit it.
Been sent to people who had not requested them, that Donald Trump would be sitting behind the Resolute desk.
Okay, but you don't think that there is, legally speaking, I know you're a lawyer because you went to the great law school, William Mary, legally speaking, there was no election fraud or no election corruption. But let's put it this way. Do you agree that 61 different federal and state courts, including 8 judges that Donald Trump appointed himself to the federal bench, have rejected every claim of electoral corruption or fraud that have been advanced? Do you agree with that?
I don't. And the reason is those claims are not evaluated because in many of the circumstances you reference, jurisdiction was the principal question. So I think it requires a review of the procedure.
Do you have any case authority in the land of those 61 cases or any other cases where a court has determined that there was electoral corruption or electoral fraud that materially affected the outcome of election in any state in the union?
No court.
Do you have one?
Which I believe is a real failure of the judiciary. I think the Article III courts failed our country by not exercising more jurisdiction over those questions. Now, there's a difference in whether or not fraud existed and whether or not there's an adequate remedy. And I think also a number of those cases were kicked on remedies.
Well, no court has said that fraud existed, and so there's no remedy because there's no violation, Mr. Gaetz.
Right, but you cannot.
There's no violation. There's no fraud.
That there was no fraud if they didn't take up the question and review the facts on jurisdiction or remedy.
You know what? That might work on Steve Bannon's podcast, but that's not going to work in the Rules Committee of the United States House of Representatives. I'm sorry.
That might work on Steve Bannon's podcast. Ouch. But not in the Rules Committee. It was pretty much all losses in the hearing today. It just kept piling up. And just as Matt Gaetz was playing to an audience of one, so too was Jim Shorts Jordan, who once again, showing up before the committee, forgot his jacket. Wait a minute. Do we have a new name for Jim Shorts Jordan? Jim Jacket Off Jordan? Oh! Screw it. I'm not waiting for the nomination. I'm giving myself a cowbell. Yes, I am. Thank you, Henry. Thank you very kindly. Henry just got us to only $40 to go on Charlene's Welcome Home Challenge. Thank you, Henry. Thank you a ton. Jim McGovern heads the Rules Committee. He's the chairman. He's a Democrat from Massachusetts. And he was trying to question Jim Shorts. And, well, Jim Jacket Off Jordan, I like that. I do. I like that a lot. Never wears his jacket. His jacket is always... if you have to explain them, they're not funny. Oh, that's true. Randy Radar says you can't pin down a trained weasel. You can't. Stop it, Robin. Lee in New York says, Matt Gaetz in makeup? He does it the way his idol and god emperor does it. He is a true apprentice. Oh, that's quality. That's good stuff. And then there's the question of more jurisdiction. And that made Steve in New York's little lawyer brain itch real bad. What exactly is more jurisdiction? Is that like more pregnant? I mean, you can have more cowbell, but yet more pregnant? More jurisdiction. There's either jurisdiction or there is not jurisdiction. It's a Yoda kind of thing. More jurisdiction. And so now, Jim McGovern trying to question Jim Jacket Off Jordan.
When you appeared before the Rules Committee earlier this year in January, I asked you to say five simple words. The election was not stolen. And you were unwilling to say them then. Can you say those five words?
I've never said it was stolen, Mr. Chairman. I'll give you the same answer. Never said it was. I said we should investigate it. I said on January 6th, when the electoral votes were counted, that Joe Biden is president of the United States. And if you got a problem with that, I don't understand it. The real question is, why don't you guys want to investigate?
God. Yeah, I never said that. Oh, okay. Thank you, Tracy. Damn, girl. Jim Jacket Off Jordan. Little flame emojis. Yeah, I'm proud of that one. We're going to hang on to that one.
You said a lot of words just now, but unfortunately you're still unwilling to say those five simple words. And I think that's incredibly important, pushing debunk conspiracy theories and
not pushing any conspiracy
fuel
theories.
To the fire when it comes to
your obsession with five words seems pretty ridiculous to me.
This works better. I mean, I'll let you speak, and then you can let me speak, and that's the way we work it here. But, we saw on January 6th how misinformation could lead some people to violence and ultimately endanger our democracy. There's a false equivalency here as an attempt to whitewash what happened on that terrible, terrible day.
I'm not trying to
I was the last person off the floor on January 6th, and I came face-to-face with these people in the speaker's gallery. And I will tell you, if you want me to describe what evil looks like, it's looking into those faces, those people who, while three police officers were in front of the door trying to protect all of us, they were smashing the windows open to get at people. The notion that there's all this outrage today over people.
Jesus, while the police were trying to keep them from getting through the doors, they were smashing the windows to get at. It sounds like there was a freaking zombie apocalypse in there, with maggot hats and Confederate flags.
People asking questions, and there's not outrage over the fact that the police, the Capitol Police, who are here to protect us and who do protect us every day, were beaten. People lost their lives. Others' lives were threatened. The fact that somehow we asking questions about trying to figure out why did this happen, who is responsible, that somehow that is a bad thing. Give me a break. Give me a break. I mean, and I, you know, and I, you know, we, someone, one of you mentioned political theater. You know, this is not political theater, I don't know what is, but let me just say one of the most genuine statements that I have heard uttered in the Capitol was by Vice Chair Cheney, who, to her credit, is embracing the truth and asking her Republican colleagues to join with her in making sure that the questions are answered in a way so the American people know what happens, so it never, ever, ever happens again. I mean, all of us are concerned about the future of our democracy in the aftermath of what happened. We don't ever want to see that happen again. So that's what this is all about. So we could talk about inflation, we could talk about the border, you could talk about whatever you want to talk about. Fine. You're at the Rules Committee, you could talk about whatever the hell you want to talk about. But the bottom line is, I think what we're doing here today is absolutely necessary.
Can I respond?
You may.
I'm not trying to whitewash anything. Republicans have been consistent. We have condemned violence every stinking time it happened. We condemned it on January 6th, and 600 people are being prosecuted and held accountable for what they did wrong, as well they should be. But it would have been nice if you guys would have condemned the violence in the summer of 2020 instead of making statements like my colleague just read. It would have been nice instead of the Vice President of the United States raising...
Oh, wait. Did he just go... Did Jim Jacket Off Jordan just go there? But black people. Antifa! Woo! Brooga, brooga, brooga! Yeah, because remember, it was an attempted coup. Agnes just reminded me of that. The people who incited the coup were dancing, and I'll note, badly, the people who incited it were dancing to the song by Laura Branigan, Gloria, while they watched it all go down. And that was a room full of white people. Mostly. Almost entirely. I mean, Herb Cain was dead by then, right? Wait, Darlene, you didn't give Tracy a cowbell for Jim Jacket Off Jordan? That was far better than the last one you gave the cowbell for. Get with the cowbell program, Robin. Wait a minute. I came up with that. Tracy was responding to me coming up with Jim Jacket Off Jordan. Now we're fighting over cowbells. This is beautiful. Thank you. Thank you so much to Brendan. We're down to $30 to go on Charlene's Welcome Home Challenge. Maybe we'll get this thing knocked out and move on downward. And not, it'd be awesome if we didn't have a four-digit fundraising hole come Friday for our party. But thank you. Thank you, Brendan. Remember, this is triple your money stuff. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you, Brendan. Correction, says Stephen New York. All Democrats care about our continuous attempts at democracy. Quite simply, the others don't. And, you know, they have no respect for process. Jim Jacket Off Jordan, well, he didn't come to answer questions or help sort out why and how this happened. He came to obfuscate, and methinks he doth protest too much, which is kind of a way of, you know, admitting something. And we'll get to another admission here in a little bit.
Raising money to bail rioters out of jail. It would have been nice if you'd have done that. No. This double standard, you guys get to say all the things you did about Trump for 4 years. You get to have the summer of 2020 and call it peaceful protest.
Because it was. I guess this is the part of the program where I once again remind us all that there is video footage showing a white right-wing agent provocateur putting a hammer through the window at, what was it, an AutoZone in Minneapolis? Yeah, that was not a Black Lives Matter protester. Oh, no. Well, true enough. Tracy says, it's official. You're a woman. At least another woman got credit for something you came up with. And a black woman at that. Yay! Oh, making lemonade out of lemons. Thank you, Tracy.
Condemn violence every single time. It'd have been nice if you guys had done the same. I am so sick of the double standard. That's Americans true. Are so sick of the double standard.
Oh, there he is, speaking for America. I'd say the majority of Americans, Jim, jacket off, Jordan, are sick of you.
Well, I think many of us did condemn it. I condemn violence wherever it may occur. But, you know, let me just say this. You can yell and scream as much as you want. The bottom line is...
No, I'm not yelling and screaming. We saw what we saw. I'm reflecting
the American people are.
No, you're not. No, you're not, Jim, jacket off, Jordan.
Had it with the double standard.
The American people saw...
You're allowed to object. We're not.
No, you could object. That's not the issue is not whether or not you have raised an objection, Mr. Jordan. The issue is what transpired that day.
We had
nothing to do with that. I mean, some of my colleagues were given tours of the Capitol and the Capitol was closed and shit, but we had nothing to do with that. Yeah. No, Lee. That's only going to confuse matters more. Please. Thank you, Cecilia. Thank you so kindly. We're down to $20 to go on Charlene's challenge. Thank you, Cecilia, so very much. The congressman, Jim McGovern of Massachusetts, bettering jacket off, said everyone cared. Yeah, not everybody. Oops, says Darlene. Sorry, give yourself a cowbell then. And extremely happy the black woman got the credit. And lemons. Oh, God, it's going to be one of those programs, isn't it? Yeah, I'm afraid so. So many things were said. There was much brugging and pontificating. But in the end, well... They're still who they are. And they're not going to come around. Because, see, let's be clear about this. They're planning the next one. They are absolutely planning the next one. So they can't say that it didn't happen, or they can't say that Biden's president, because this is the best fundraising dodge that the Republican Party has ever had. They have tapped in. I mean, this is the equivalent of inventing fracking for political cash. This horse shit about Nitwit Nero actually winning the election and Republicans having nothing to do with the insurrection. Oh no. They're not going to kill the goose that lays the golden eggs. Hell no. So, yeah. But I said we would talk in a minute about somebody protesting too much. And this is that moment. And what I said, and you didn't hear it because I didn't hit the record button quick enough, if you're listening to the podcast, so this will be new to you. We have, I know, people kind of go, oh, no, not that. When we start talking about sports, and in particular, college football. But this is one of those moments when, and I am saying that, John in Central PA, it's Jim Jacket Off Jordan. Because he never has his jacket on. Even though house rules say he's supposed to wear one. So he is Jim Jacket Off Jordan. And you may make of that what you wish. It is a double entendre. Mm-hmm. But, so if you were a follower of college football, you've seen this little set piece play out any number of occasions. A coaching position at a premier marquee university will open, and there will immediately begin speculation as to the short list of potential candidates to fill the job. And there's always some young up-and-comer, somewhere like, oh, I don't know, Busted Knuckle Polytechnic. The fighting fire ants of Busted Knuckle. And some sports reporter will stick a microphone in Coach Makeabuck's face and say, Coach, you're being mentioned as a potential candidate for the job that's opened, the big marquee university job that's opened. And what do you think about that? Well, you know, I plan to stay here at Busted Knuckle Polytech and be a fighting fire ant for the rest of my coaching career. This is where I want to start my coaching career, and this is where I want to finish my coaching career. I ain't never wanted to be nothing in my life except the coach of the fighting fire ants of Busted Knuckle Polytechnic. And a week later, he's on a plane, and a day after that, he shows up, I don't know, putting on a ball cap with a big M on it, or a big O, or a cross, or something. So when the coach says, no, I ain't talked to him at all, and I ain't going to do nothing but the head coach of the Busted Knuckle Polytechnic Fighting Fire Ants, it is a lead pipe cinch that he is on his way out the damn door. And so it was today when somebody walked along. And I see the street there behind him. In fact, I can see the building where it's the Methodist apartment building on Capitol Hill. It's where we used to have our headquarters of the 8 campaign. Wish we still had it. But Joe Manchin, hey Joe, how you doing? Let's end mountaintop removal. I've seen him on the street there on a number of occasions. Great day to be a West Virginian, Joe. Let's stop mountaintop removal. What? Because we did that. But some reporters caught up with him, an NBC reporter named Frank Thorpe V. And they had the video and the audio rolling, and, well, this is what happened.
I can't control rumors, and it's bullshit. Bullshit spelled with a B-U-L-L.
Because somebody done asked him about this rumor that's flying around that David Korn reported it over in Mother Jones, that Joe Manchin has a plan ready to jump ship and declare himself a member of the American Independent Party. Not going to be a Democrat, not going to be a Republican, but he's going to jump ship to teach them damn Democrats to stop trying to create an entitlement society. Right. And so having been asked about the report that he's getting ready to stick the shiv to the people of West Virginia and the people of the entire country, this was his response.
I can't control rumors, and it's bullshit. Bullshit spelled with a B-U-L-L, capital B.
I asked you, but...
Yeah, bullshit, bullshit. I ain't never going to be nothing but the head coach of the busted knuckle fighting fire ants, because this is where my heart lies with the fighting fire ants of busted knuckle polytech. It's bullshit, I'm telling you. B-U-L-L with a capital B. Bullshit. Well, it'll take about a week. Maybe. I don't know. So, you know, just to consider it for what it is. Okay, Brother Deacon Asa. Hey, Robin, if your Uncle Jim, Jacket Off Jordan helped you off an elephant, would you help your Uncle Jim Jordan jack off an elephant asking for a former president? Oh, how much jacket could Jim Shorts Jordan jack it off if Jim Shorts Jordan could jack it up? Deborah Redland. Yeah, something like that. Okay, sure. Why not? And thank you very kindly. We are now down to $10 to go on Charlene's challenge. Thank you to Postal Weight Education Services. Thank you so kindly. $10 to go. And nobody can get his jacket off quite like old Jim. Well, Jim, he's a past master of jacket off. Jim Jacket Off Jordan. John, Central PA, JACKETOFF, Jim Jacket Off Jordan. And it's supposed to sound that way. I think we have a thing now. Sports speak, says Steve in New York. Not just for college sports, what the GM owner says. Coach X has our full support. What the general manager owner means, fuckers out of here. What the coach says, I want to spend my career here at BKU. What the coach means, while at the introductory press conference, I'd like to thank the people of Big U for this opportunity. I think maize and blue is going to look delicious on me. I like maize. You call it corn. Yeah. Exactly what it means. Hey, let's run over to the Skype line. Check in with Tracy. Hey, Tracy.
Hey there.
Hey there. Hi there. So, ho there. You're as welcome as can be. M-I-C-K-E-Y. Yeah.
Motherfucking you, Effie.
Yes, indeed.
So, I was listening to, you know, Jim, and I will never get tired of hearing Jim Jacket Off Jordan. Oh my God!
Was that a moment? I mean, we've had some moments over the almost two decades, but
you know, but oh my fucking God, that was amazing. So I remember a couple of weeks ago, I mentioned that I was privileged to be able to listen, to be able to hear Patrice Cullors speak at my, you know, virtually at my school.
Right.
And for those of you who do not know, Patrice Cullors is one of the founding members of Black Lives Matter. So I actually I'm writing a paper on her. And so as he was going on about, you know, what about the summer of 2020 and blah, 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 I was actually reading the introduction to her book So the name of her book is When They Call You a Terrorist, a Black Lives Matter memoir. So here's the introduction real quick. We are stardust. I write to keep in contact with our ancestors and to spread truth to people. That's a quote by Sonia Sanchez. Days after the election of 2016, Asha sent me a link to a talk by astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson. We have to have hope, she says to me across 3,000 miles, she in Brooklyn, me in Los Angeles. We listen together as Dr. deGrasse Tyson explains that the very atoms and molecules in our bodies are traceable to the crucibles and the centers of stars that once upon a time exploded into gas clouds. And those gas clouds formed other stars, and those stars possessed the divine right, mixed the properties needed to create not only planets, including our own, but also people, including us, me, and her. He is saying that not only are we the universe, in the universe, but the universe is in us. He is saying that we human beings are literally made out of stardust. And I know when I hear Dr. deGrasse Tyson say this, that he is telling the truth, because I have seen it since I was a child, the magic, the stardust we are, the lives of the people I come from. I watched it in the labor of my mother, a Jehovah Witness, and a woman who worked two, sometimes three jobs at a time, keeping other people's children, working in the reception desks of gyms and telemarketing, doing anything and everything for 16 hours a day. The whole of my childhood in the Van Nuys barrio where we live. My mother, Coco Brown and Smooth, disowned by her family for the children she had at a very young age, and a married woman. My mother never giving up despite never making a living wage. I started in the thin brown face of my father, a boy out of Cajun country, a wounded healer whose addictions were born of a world that did not love him and hold him, so not once but constantly. My father, who always came back, who never stopped trying to be the version of himself there was no mirrors for. And I knew it because I'm a 13th generation progeny of a people who survived the hulls of slave ships, survived the chains, the whips, the months, laying in their own shit and piss. The human beings legislated as not human beings who watched their names, their language, their gods and goddesses, the arc of their dances, the beat of their songs, the majesty of their dreams, their very family snatched up and stolen, disassembled and discarded. And despite this, built language and honored God and create movement and upheld love. What could there be but stardust? These people who refuse to die, who refuse to accept the idea that their lives did not matter, that their children's lives did not matter. Our foreparents imagined our families out of a whole cloth. They imagined each individual one of us. They imagined me. They had to. It was the only way I am here today, a mother, a wife, a community organizer, and queer. An artist, a dreamer, learning to find hope while navigating the shadows of hell, even as I know it might have been otherwise. I was not expected or encouraged to survive. My brothers and little sisters, my family, the one that I was born into and the one I created, were not expected to survive. We lived in a precarious life on a tightrope of poverty bordered at each end with the politics of personal responsibility that black pastors and then the black president preach. They preached that more than they preached a commitment to collective responsibility. They preached it more than they preached about it, what it meant to be in the world's wealthiest nation, yet the place with extraordinary unemployment, extraordinary lack of livable wages, and an extraordinary disruption of basic opportunity. And they preached that more, and as they preached that more than they preached about America having only 5% of the world's population, but 25%. Of its prison population, a population for which for a long time included my disabled brother and gentle father who never raised a hand against another human being, and a prison population that, with extraordinary deliberation today, excludes the man who shot and killed a 17-year-old boy who was carrying Skittles and iced tea. There was a petition that was drafted and circulated all the way to the White House. It said we were terrorists. We who, in response to the killing of that child, said Black Lives Matter. The document gained traction during the first week of July 2016, and after a week of protests against back-to-back police killings of Alton Sterling in Baton Rouge and Philando Castile in Minneapolis. At the end of that week, on July 7th, Dallas, Texas, a sniper opened fire during a Black Lives Matter protest that was populated with mothers and fathers who brought their children along to proclaim, we have a right to live. The sniper identified as 25-year-old Michael Johnson, a Army Reservist home from Afghanistan, holed up in a building on the campus of El Centro College after killing five police officers, and wounding 11 others, including two protesters. In the early mornings of hours of July 8, 2016, he became the first individual ever to be blown up by local law enforcement. They used a military-grade bomb against Michael Johnson and programmed a robot to deliver it to him. No jury, no trial. No patience like the patience shown to the killers who gunned down nine worshipers in Charleston or moviegoers in Aurora, Colorado. Of course, we will never know what his motivations really were, and we will never know if he was mentally unstable. We will only know for sure that the single organization to which he ever belonged to was the U.S. Army. And we will remember that the white men who were mass killers in Aurora and Charleston were taken alive. One was fed fast food on the way to jail. We will remember that most of the cops who are killed in this nation are killed by white men who are taken alive. We will experience all the ways that the ghost of Michael Johnson will be weaponized against Black Lives Matter, will be weaponized against me, a tactic from the way back has continually been used against people who challenge white supremacy. We will remember that Nelson Mandela remained on the FBI's list of terrorists until 2008. Even still, the accusation of being a terrorist is devastating, and I allow myself space to cry quietly as I lie in bed on a Sunday morning listening to a red-faced, hysterical Rudolph Giuliani spit lies about us 3 days after Dallas. Like many of the people who embody our movement, I have lived my life between the twin terrors of poverty and the police, coming of age in the drug war climate that was ratcheted up by Ronald Reagan and then Bill Clinton. The neighborhood where I lived and loved, and the neighborhoods where many of the members of Black Lives Matter have lived and loved were designated war zones, and the enemy was us. The fact that more white people have always used and sold drugs than black and brown people, and yet when we close our eyes and think of a drug seller or user of face, the most of us we see are black and brown, tells you what you need to know. If you cannot readily imagine how someone can be doing no harm yet be harassed by police, literally breathing while black became a cause for arrest or worse. I carry the memory of living under that terror, the terror of knowing that I or any member of my family could be killed with impunity in my blood, my bones, in every step I take. And yet I was called a terrorist. The member of our movements were called terrorists. Me, Alicia Garza, and Oprah Kamadi. The three women who founded Black Lives Matter are called terrorists. We the people, we are not terrorists. I am not a terrorist. I am Patrice Marie Kahn Cullors Brignac. I am a survivor. I am Stardust.
Damn, that's powerful.
I asked Jim Jordan.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can understand why he would think. You would think you would understand. You could understand because, I mean, black.
Mm-hmm. Because, you know, of course.
Because this goes all the way. This goes all the way back to Katrina. Remember Katrina? Mm-hmm. Remember the difference between looting and foraging?
And foraging. Yes.
Yeah.
Looting and foraging.
Since we're kind of in that neighborhood, you ever heard of a woman by the name of Michelle Fiore? Or Fior?
Yes. Didn't she run for the Republican for governor against Meg Whitman? Or is that her?
Well, no, she's a big big supporter of ammonium nitrate Bundy.
Oh.
And she's a gun humper, and she has announced her candidacy, Tracy, for governor of Nevada. And doesn't she just have a campaign commercial? Might want to get the hockey puck. Everybody else, too.
Okay.
Yeah, because she's out in the desert, and she got her pick-em-up truck. And on her pick-em-up truck, there's a Trump 2024 sticker. Okay? And now she's going to talk.
Del Fiore, and I'm running for governor. I spent my whole life fighting the establishment. I was the first female majority leader in the Nevada Assembly and one of the first electeds to endorse Donald J. Trump.
And she's wearing a leather jacket over her red dress, and she's got her gun strapped onto her hip. I don't give a damn about what she's doing. I don't give a damn about what she's wearing, but I will tell you that, well, you know, that semi-automatic pistol strapped to her hip, yeah, that's a...
Isn't it kind of hot in the desert to be wearing a leather jacket? I'm just...
Well, I mean, you'd probably know more about that than I do. I mean, you've been there more than me.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, I have been, you know, I'm a frequent visitor to Nevada, and it's hot as fuck. But
well,
go on, carry on.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. She got her freedom protector strapped right there on her hip.
And you better believe I was attacked for it. Washington Post called me a gun-toting calendar girl. And Politico magazine said that I was the Lady Trump. And I don't care.
You do care. You love that shit. Never mind. Mm-hmm. So she's walking and she's walking and she's walking and she keeps walking out of the viewfinder of the camera, and they have to keep tracking her. And it...
We need outsiders, fighters, not the same old boring moderate compromise Lou Blazer politicians.
Yeah, she don't like jackets either. She jacket off too, because she just shoved over a TV set with a picture of Bishop Willard Romney on it because he's wearing a jacket, and she's all into jacket off. And Matt in San Francisco, by the way, said Jim jacket off. I think Jim was jacket off in the shower, which is why he never reported the incident. Ow! Well played, Matt. Well played.
Well played.
Yeah.
There's going to be so much traction for Jim jacket off Jordan. You have come up, it might be part of, the lexicon. I'm just saying. I mean,
well, I have now put it out into the Twitterverse. I'm sure it'll sink like a stone, like all my other tweets do. But
but because somebody else will pick it up and then they'll get the credit for it. You'll hear it on not Rachel Maddow. You'll hear it on what's that girl's name? The lesbian. What's her name? White girl. They're all white.
You did not just do that. Oh, what's her name? White girl. Lesbian. They're all lesbians. Lesbians everywhere. God damn it. Just be raining lesbians up in here.
Stephanie Miller.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Who is she? That lesbian white girl. What? You know, between you and Todd throwing around that word, y'all just going to get me in terrible, terrible trouble.
What, you mean ginger?
Yeah, the same letters.
I've actually embraced using ginger. I've gotten people to say it. My mother loves it. You got a cowbell for my mom with that.
No!
I'm like, yeah,
Mama?
My mom's like, Coral Lee, Porter Johnson Sanders. No, I can't. I promised I wouldn't give all the last names. But no, when I said ginger, please, and I told her how you came up with this, she's like, okay, I'm using that. So you got props from my mom.
God damn it. Yeah, I know. Anyway, so she Michelle Fiore, she wants jacket off too, but hers is still on, ironically. And she shoved the TV, shoved the TV set down onto the desert floor. And I don't know, maybe she's going to reach for her gun or something.
Let's start with a three-shot plan.
Now she's pulled her gun. She's got a three-shot plan. Oh, dear.
Ban vaccine mandate.
And she's shooting beer bottles. The first one's labeled vaccine mandate. That's her three-shot plan. No shots. Three-shot, no shot. Ban vaccine mandates. And what's that, Michelle?
Let's start with a three-shot plan. ban vaccine mandates, ban critical race theory, and stop voter fraud.
You know what's curious, though, Tracy? Ostensibly, she's shooting beer bottles labeled vaccine mandate, CRT, and voter fraud. And yet, what we have are close-ups of the bottles exploding, not a wide shot of her actually shooting and hitting the bottles. So my guess is they was probably shot point blank because there's nothing for scale here to show where these bottles are. So that's her three-shot plan. Ban vaccine mandates. Ban critical race theory. That's right. We're banning. She wants to ban an idea. Where have we heard of that before, Tracy? So that's her three shots.
The Joe Biden administration is coming after me. I'm Michelle Fiore, and I'm ready for the fight.
What are you going to do, Missy? Michelle.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? The Biden administration's coming after. The Biden administration doesn't even know her name. She's such a nothing. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, they're coming after her. Right. And she got a gun. She got a gun. Lord, if the Biden administration came after you, honey, they'd send a Black Hawk helicopter. What are you going to do? You going to unload your little Glock there at it? The breadth and depth of the...
When you said Michelle Fiore, I got her mixed up with Carly, what's her name? Fiorina Arena or whatever. She's the one that ran for governor.
Oh, yeah, Carly Fiorina. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I'm like, why is that now? You know, but she's a Republican. So I wasn't that far off. They're both Republicans.
Well, apparently Michelle Fiore is a bit of a wackadoodle. She's under investigation by the FBI for campaign finance dodgery. And a fellow councilwoman by the name of Victoria Seaman says that she broke her finger when she assaulted her at City Hall. And she's a racist. I mean, that's not like, you know, she's a racist. No. She once remarked as to her qualifications in government, "My white ass is more qualified than somebody's black ass."
What?
Mm-hmm. She said it in front of 250 people.
Wait, she said, "My white ass is more qualified than somebody's black ass." She said that out loud.
In public.
Camera.
Yeah.
In public, where people have this thing called, you know, phones with cameras.
And she's an All Lives Matter one. Mm-hmm. And then had the nerve to say, I didn't say that shit. Mm-mm.
What? Back in the day, you can kind of get away with that shit, even though most people who have sins would be like...
You mean back before cell phones had cameras on them?
Yeah. But now... Oh, look at her. I just pulled up her picture.
No.
I wasn't going to say what. I was just going to say she's a busty girl, isn't she? The girl, she's curvy. And I'm not saying that in a mean way.
No.
But I'm looking at her, and other than she's just reminding me. I mean, I really haven't paid attention. I haven't heard her talk that much. I was going on the commercial. But she has the look of a Meghan McCain.
Interesting you would say that.
Oh, no. What did I do? Did I just break up some shit?
Well, I mean, yeah. Our little nutmeg is pissed off.
Oh, who?
She gave an interview to her bestie, S.E. Cup, and they published it in Rolling Stone. And S.E. Cup asked her, why do people have this princess impression of you? And she said, I'm very aware of this, like spoiled, entitled queen of nepotism persona that's out there. Some of it, I think, is I didn't always react my best on air on The View. To my defense, neither did anyone else. Everybody's just watching me react badly and the most and making the most of it. I think partly Saturday Night Live parodies have this way of becoming reality. People really loved it when SNL dunked on me, and it was not flattering or kind. And by the way, they were pretty nice to the rest of the View cast, just not great to me. I feel like I have a pretty healthy sense of humor, but I think if people knew what it has done to me mentally, emotionally, the toll it's taken on me, the depression that's followed, just the dark spirals, I felt like for a while I was just a laughing stock of the country. Yeah, because the SNL skit had her declaring, can I just say something as the Princess of Arizona? Still clueless. Still doesn't understand why she made a walking parody of herself.
Right. I mean, it just...
And no, everybody else on The View was not behaving badly. Everybody else on The View did not begin every sentence with, listen, I'm John McCain's daughter.
Uh-huh. My father, John McCain.
Now, I mean, if Melanoma Trump had been there, she might have said that. Actually, she'd say, you know, I am Michelle Obama's sister.
Okay, so I'm going to try not to be catty. Okay, so I'm going through the images, and apparently one of the pictures that she's using is definitely Photoshop. I'm just saying, okay, I'm going to stop, but you set yourself up with this shit. Yeah, definitely Photoshop.
Well, I mean, you can kind of see when photos have been filtered. I mean, can't you?
It's beyond filtered. I mean, now she's, it's like, okay, I have nothing. Look, I'm a good girl. I mean, you have witnessed me, you know, just yesterday. What was I eating? Red velvet cake, which, by the way, was amazing. I'm a big girl. I enjoy eating. But there is no way that I'm going to, and people who know me know that I'm a big girl. There's no way I'm going to put a picture of me on Facebook or anywhere, or Twitter, or what have you, you know, with me whittled down with a waistline that I know don't have, that does not exist. And I'm not talking,
You mean making yourself look like making yourself look like you're so skinny you got to run around in the shower to get wet?
Pretty much, or just making yourself look like you did, you know, before the kids, before the baby, before, you know.
The red velvet cake.
The red velvet cake, the Randy's donuts, the Krispy Kreme donuts, all that shit. You know?
Life happens.
Life happens. But because of who, you know, because of the way this country is, this fucking patriarchal, you know, heteronormative notion of what beauty is, white beauty, we are all, you know, caught up in this fucking trap of this bullshit of where we should be, how we should be looking. Because, I mean, I'm looking at her. She's a beautiful woman.
Yes.
She's an attractive woman. Unfortunately, she has a black heart. You know, I mean,
evil.
Again, evil bitch. Half the number. I mean, and she's an idiot, obviously. And all that good shit. I can't with these people.
I know. By the way, Brother Deacon Asa said, regarding Michelle Fiore, wait a second. Did I just hear that asshole say I've spent all my life fighting the establishment and I was the first female majority leader in the Nevada Assembly? Both of those things? Does she not see the thickness of the irony here? This is like Ron DeSantis trying to stop Big Gummit from interfering in your life by banning mask mandates using a fucking governor's decree. No, irony is lost on them. Irony is lost on them.
It's just lost. GOP, oh, I'm looking at this, GOP Bob Graham, Michelle Fiore enters Nevada's governor's race. An audible sigh. Yeah. These people are just, it's exhausting.
Well, I got another one that's going to exhaust you. Dear God, Eustace, Florida. And a young man by the name of Louis Grahai, G-R-A-H-A-I. He's an autistic young man. And he has been rated at having the intellectual capacity of about a four-year-old. He can't speak. And has no control of his bowels. You there, Tracy? Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what I did.
No worries, no worries. So, we were Eustis, Florida, Louis Grahai, young man, autistic, mental capacity of about a four-year-old, unable to speak, can't control his bowels. So the Eustis police got a call about a possible burglary. And they show up and they see this young man. He's walking around the neighborhood without his shoes. So the police... So the police start yelling, "Get on your stomach! Get on the ground! I don't want to do it again! Hands behind your back! Put your hands behind your back!" And they tased him once, and then they tased him twice. And ground his head into the pavement. He has neck and ear damage. He has to wear a neck brace now. That's what his mama told the news station in Orlando, WESH. She also said, "Everybody loves Lou. He's lovable. Everybody knows he ain't going to hurt nobody. Typically, he don't wander out of the house. If he didn't go down when you tell him to, what's the next thing you're going to do? Shoot him. That's my worst nightmare." The police, meanwhile, said, "Well, our officers did the best they could. We used our de-escalation techniques based on the knowledge that the officers had at the time. Had they known this here was a severely autistic person, I doubt any force would have been used. I think they done everything right. It could have been a lot worse. Thank God it wasn't." And so we have... We have the following, the little snippet that the city released.
"The details of this next story are tough to hear. A 20-year-old man with autism was tased by police, ended up in the hospital."
Yeah, his family says he has the mind of a child and didn't understand what was happening at the time. The Eustis police chief says officers reacted based on the information they had at the time. West News' Michelle Meredith talked exclusively with the man's mother, who was upset about how the whole thing was handled.
"Get on your stomach! Step it up!"
Eustis police released this body cam video so you can see their side of the story.
"You had the perfect storm."
The mother of Louis Grahai agreed to go on camera so she could tell her son's side of the story.
"He don't know what y'all talking about, what y'all doing to him. Please get off him."
The story starts Saturday afternoon in a Eustis neighborhood. Police get a call, burglary in progress. The woman is scared, says a man she did not know approached her, then allegedly tried to break into her house.
"I don't know if he was slamming it or like, but I heard the knob on the door like shaking."
Eustis police quickly find the man they're looking for. They yell multiple commands and all.
Tracy, did you notice the voice of the? I don't know if he was knocking on the door or he was shaking it.
All they know is he's ignoring every one of them.
Get on your stomach, dude. Get on your stomach. I don't want to do it again.
What they don't know is that 20-year-old Louis Greja is a man diagnosed with severe autism, cannot speak. According to his family, he has the mental capacity of a 4-year-old. He's over 6 feet tall and wears diapers.
Everybody loves Luke. He's lovable.
Hands behind your back. Put your hands behind your back.
Lewis normally does not wander far from home, but on this day he did. Police tase him. He barely reacts. They tase him again. There's confusion.
Put your hands behind your back.
Then more confusion when the family gets to the scene.
Okay, we got a call about him breaking into someone's house.
No.
So that's where we're at right now.
And I see my baby on the ground with one taser in the back of his neck.
Eustis Police Chief Craig Capri says his officers were doing the best they could with the information they...
Well, I mean, at least we didn't shoot him.
Right, he's not dying. What's your problem? He's still alive.
You know, there's a reason we really shouldn't send the police to de-escalate behavioral health issues.
Nope. And this is one of the... When we're talking about defunding the police and putting money into having, you know, trained professionals, like I'm going to be someday, go and de-escalate these situations. Social workers, therapists, psychologists, whatever. It's like, it's again, it is exhausting.
Yeah.
It is so fucking exhausting. It was this. So I take it that the young man was a black man.
Yes.
Okay. Mhm.
And the burglary
and
victim.
And the woman
did
was
not.
A white woman.
She did not show up on camera.
Mhm.
Because she about got an innocent, behaviorally challenged young man dead. And she did get him tased a couple of times.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, it's that town's fault, it's that police department's fault, because they send people with no training in these issues out onto the streets with guns and tasers and clubs. God, his poor mama. Him, poor fella.
I just love how what you just said, you know, goes, and I just talked about, you know, defunding the police. Back to the book, we rent a car and drive to Ferguson, which is like driving into an occupied zone. Law enforcement from multiple municipalities is there. The National Guard is there. There are tanks on street corners. Even Los Angeles, with this constant cop drive-bys and helicopters, does not prepare me for this. My God, I think all the money put into suppress a community, we need far less to ensure it thrives. I'm just saying. So you have all the money in the world to basically occupy our neighborhoods, to open police our neighborhood, to have a young man, fortunately, who did not die, but he was hurt. He was tased.
Yeah. Well, and that's like Steve in New York asked the salient question, since when is electrocuting someone de-escalating?
Right.
And Brother John says, where was the CERT team? Ta-da. And I don't mean to be demeaning when I say, you know, the young fella. I mean, he's standing up, walking, they tase him, and he falls flat, literally flat on his face. And the cops claim that he wasn't responding to the... He fell flat on his face when they tased him the first time. And then he was laying on the ground, you know, not speaking. You know, the not speaking part you'd think would be a clue. Because I think if you tase somebody, you're going to say, I don't know, don't tase me, bro, or ow. Poor young man's completely nonverbal.
It makes me think of the kids that I've been driving to and from school for the past 14 years.
Well, I brought up the story not as a trigger, but because you actually have real world experience in this.
Yes. And there was this one young man that I used to drive. He was easily 6'4", 6'5". Weighing over at least 250, if not more. Gentle soul, nonverbal, but imposing as fuck. And as a matter of fact, a few years back, he lived over by Loyola Marymount, and there's a fountain there. And a few years back, he got out of his house and got into the fountain and was naked in the fountain and all that. Fortunately, he wasn't hurt.
Oh, I remember that story.
They got him. Yeah, that was one of my students.
Holy shit.
That was one of my students.
Well, it's just one after another, you know. Of course, I'm headed 2 weeks from this past Monday, headed down Birmingham way. And Hoover is a suburb of Birmingham. And back on Valentine's Day of 2020, a woman was ambushed outside her apartment in Hoover. And the cops say they've got a strong suspect, but they still don't have enough evidence to make an arrest. But some of her personal effects have been returned. Two things weren't: her wedding ring and her Apple Watch. And, well, her ex-husband, Philip Stanton, called the cops and said, I was thinking this would be breaking the case. I'm calling the detectives asking, can we check pawn shops? Well, turned out, no. The state of Alabama auctioned her ring, her wedding ring, and her Apple Watch in an unclaimed property auction.
Say to what?
Coroner said, well, we tried to contact the only next of kin we had any airy knowledge of, but we waited 10 months before we auctioned it off. And the ring was sold to a man in Missouri, and he won't sell it back to her ex-husband, even though he's offering more money than he paid for it. She and her ex-husband were together 30-some-odd years, married for 18, had 3 kids together before they divorced. And he said she never stopped wearing the wedding ring. We were together since high school, 30-something years, married for 18. We had 3 kids together. He said she was murdered by the streets and robbed by the state. Shemethia Coteet Stanton. Jesus.
My mom and I were having this conversation about how, you know, the media and how they treat it when black women and indigenous women, when they disappear, as opposed to women and girls. And when John and I were away,
we were watching 2020, and you know how when you watch Hulu, they do the autoplay and suggest something, and it was about, you know, JonBenet Ramsey. And not to take away from the grief and the pain of that little girl dying.
No, of course not.
And the fact, you know, that years, 25 years, and they're still talking about solving her murder. But when a little black girl or black woman or an indigenous woman, women go missing, nothing.
By the hundreds, in places like Wyoming and Montana and Canada. Hundreds and hundreds.
There was a big outcry when the show came out, Big Sky. And it was about it takes place in Montana. And the storyline was about these two white girls who get kidnapped. And the indigenous population went crazy. They're like, what the fuck? Y'all gonna have a show about, and based in Montana. And the premise is about y'all looking for two white girls who weren't even from the state, by the way. They were driving to visit somebody. I think they were from California. And the focus is on finding them and everything that went into finding them. But yet and still. So ABC had to clean up their shit. And this, so like in one of the later episodes, there was like a radio announcement about, you know, indigenous women missing and stuff like that in Montana.
Jesus Christ.
The blatant disregard. Well, I just think about, you know, one of my few forays into writing poetry. And I wrote about one of the things I wrote. It said, when we go missing, nobody looks. But when it's an Aryan woman, it's blowing up. I mean, like the girl whose boyfriend or fiance, whatever, killed her on their trip. And again, not taking away from the grief and the pain. But they're already talking about making a movie about her. How many movies has been made about, you know, about black women who were murdered by the Grim Sleeper?
Yeah. I know.
I mean, they still have no idea, really, about how many black women were killed by that man. They still have no clue. Because when the police found their bodies, they were, LAPD identified them as, you know, what is it, NHI. No humans involved. That's how those women were characterized.
Jesus.
So.
And you know, going back to. Going back to the Luger High in Florida, Eustis, Florida, you know, Matt pointed out, you know, the diapers might have been a tip-off.
He had on diapers?
Yeah, had no bowel control. Had pants on, but
yeah,
still, you know. And Brother John, who asked where was the CERT team, said, you know, this has happened before. I work with mentally compromised adult males. I'm 5'6" and 145 pounds. I de-escalate all the time. You know, they don't because they don't want to. I mean, that's the bottom line.
Again, I have de-escalated situations.
Well, you kind of have to by virtue of your job.
Right. Amazingly, nobody wound up dead.
It's because you don't call the LAPD or the LA County Sheriff's Department.
Well, you know, there's that part.
I mean, that's the best way not to have somebody get dead, not calling the cops. But, you know, it just goes on and on and on. It's prayer meeting Wednesday, after all. And by the way, we're at the halfway point of the program. We got $10 to go on Charlene's challenge. Charlene's welcome home, welcome back challenge. And that'll get us. That would get it. Don't know because you jumped in last night.
No. I'm getting ready to go because my children are about to get into the car. But I just want to do a quick shout out and say, y'all, you know what's about to come down for Robin. And stuff is most crucial. She needs your donations. She needs every dime counts, every penny counts. So please do what you can. That's all. So anyway,
thank you, Trace.
I am not going to say I'm going to give money because I know how you are. But anyway, I love you guys, and you guys have a wonderful evening, and we will talk again soon. Hopefully, I can chime in on Friday.
I hope so. Tracy, you take care. Drive careful.
I will. Bye.
Bye now. The one and only Tracy, lady cab driver, out in L.A., on the mean streets of L.A., yeah. You know, those kids are lucky to have her. Like I said, it is prayer meeting Wednesday, and it's not like there aren't prayer meeting stories. Start in Illinois, shall we? With the Rochester First Baptist Church. Oh, God, you know how this is going to go, right? And their gospel sharp is a dude by the name of Joseph M. Kroll, K-R-O-L. And he was sitting at home one day and heard a knock on the door and, "Open up in the name of the law." Do they still do that? It was the cops. Because, see, when they took to knocking, Brother Pastor Minister Kroll kind of figured he knew why they were there. So he snatched up his phone, started deleting his Snapchat conversations, even did a factory reset of his phone. Sergeant Roger Pope of the Macon County Sheriff's Office, speaking to the Herald and Review newspaper, said, prior to answering the door, Kroll was seen grabbing his cell phone and manipulating the buttons while standing in the kitchen area. Deputies immediately located his phone, but he had factory reset the phone in an attempt to wipe all of the data. Well, there was only one problem. The little 15-year-old girl that he was grooming to have Christian sexual abuse time with, well, her parents found out, and they turned the phone over to the police. You know, not all cops, right? And the cops did the right thing, and they took the account, and they started communicating with Pastor, Brother, Minister, Servant of Jesus Christ Kroll. And he just kept typing away. Hey, yeah, oh, you're so cute. Yeah. Uh-huh. He's 36 years old. Last Friday, he was taken down and charged with grooming a minor. You know, for sexy time. Meanwhile, at the Galilee Baptist Church, where he was the pastor until June of 2021, they said, "We as a church take these allegations seriously and will cooperate with law enforcement in any investigation. We are eager to minister to all involved in this situation and will be offering professional counseling service to the victim of the alleged incident." We're praying for all involved. That means they're praying for Kroll, too. Blech. Yuck. Tell you what. Don't be counseling or ministering any of the victims, okay? They need professionals, not gospel hustlers. God, it's so disgusting. And, of course, the church is chock-a-block with them. Full of them. Probably the leading institution wherein one is likely to find sexual predators. And then there's this guy, Brother Salvador Alvarez at Steadfast Baptist Church in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, Stan. He's one of those, with some modern flavor of hate church, probably associated with that one vicious jackass in Arizona. And these churches exist for one reason and one reason only. And that is to attack the LGBTQ community. Yeah. Get the bucket.
Now they want to execute judgment on the good who will disdain the abominable act of sodomy, you know, the people who will have a vile attitude towards the and sodomites will be reported of as having committed hate crimes. You know, that's a mixed up justice system and needs to be called out. If they were to execute judgment, you know, that he beareth not the sword in vain, where they execute, you know, executions like the Bible says, they actually execute. You know, you don't go with the sword and you know, slap them. It's the sword to be able to have executions in Romans 13. If they would actually...
Did you notice the congregation giggling there when you don't slap them with the sword, you run them through? Yeah, and they giggled. Because Christians getting to kill people they don't like is fun. Woo, Prince of Peace, y'all!
Commit executions on the pedophile, executions on the on the sodomites. If they had executed, you know, an adulterer or committing adultery with another man's wife, then we wouldn't have to call them out. There would be no reason to call out a fox that is not a fox. But
huh?
Jesus Christ wasn't afraid to call a fox a fox. He wasn't afraid to call names.
Mm-hmm. And that is not Christian. That's just Christianity. And as long as it is not called out and disavowed by other Christian sects, it's Christianity. And by the way, you know the word that was beeped out, I'm sure. And he said, talked about executing pedophiles. They'd be executing a whole lot of preachers, just like Brother Alvarez there. Oh, yes, they would. Never stops. Never lets up. And somebody in his congregation may very well take it into their own hands to go and act on his words. That's how stochastic terrorism works. Lord. On and on and on. Meanwhile, well, there's always plenty of stuff on this prayer meeting Wednesday. It's time to check in with Dr. Stella Emanuel. You may recall she was a member of America and probably still is a member of America's Frontline Doctors. The people who were hustling hydroxychloroquine. Remember, this is this is the same woman who says that demons steal men's penises and hide them under the sea, and that's where impotence and erectile dysfunction comes from. And, ooh, she's found another problem. She claimed, Dr. Stella Emanuel, censored and deplatformed for trying to save lives. Oh, dear.
The devil has power to give breath
to the clones, to the images, that they will cause all those that will not take the mark to be killed. Just like you're saying, I want to assassinate those that will not take the mark, the number of the beast or the name of the beast. I don't think the mark is right now, but we're dealing with the number of the beast and the name of the beast. The Moderna vaccine has Luciferase, which is the name of the beast. Everything about this vaccine has 666, which is the number of the beast. So these clones are going to, the devil has
power. Wait, you remember Star Wars, the Clone Wars? Yeah, she's saying that there's clones all over the planet that have been put here by the devil. And the clones are killing the people who won't take the vaccine. It's not COVID, it's clones. Whoop!
Power to give life to the image, the clones, that they will cause people in the hospital to die. They will not give them medicine. They will make stupid laws. They will lock down cities. They will make children get sacrificed.
Okay, you know, so earlier we were talking, we gave Jim Shorts Jordan his new nickname, you know, Jim Jacket Off Jordan. The right wing whackadoodle dude, really? Oh, I'm on point this evening. Whackadoodle dude. She's appearing on something called oh God, I can't make this up. The Stu Peters show. Stupiders. .tv. Stu Peters show. Yeah, some like them braised, some like them broiled, some like them stewed. I'll let myself out.
They'll go to abortion clinics. They'll make you rip out babies out of the mother's womb at 9 months. The evil that is going on is not human evil. The technology that we're calling science is Nephilim technology. It's demonic technology.
Mm-hmm. Sure it is. Sure it is, Stella! And Stu Peters is just sitting there. I'm not even sure that's actually Stu. It may just be a picture of Stu because he never appears to move or breathe. And that's kind of what you do when you got somebody on talking about demon clones. Right. Thank God for these people. No, I'm kidding. Oh, and going back to Joseph Kroll, just in case you were wondering, we have a snippet here of one of his sermons. This is the guy who was grooming the 15-year-old little girl to fuck her. I mean, it is what it is. Curiously, well, it's one of those physician heal thyself kind of moments.
And so these people are ungodly, so they are sly, they are ungodly, but they also have no restraint. Go back to verse 4.
You know what it takes to keep from grooming a 15-year-old little girl for sexy time? It takes morals. It takes common human decency, but also it takes, I don't know, restraint. But then again, maybe, no, that's gross, I'm not going there.
It says, ungodly people, watch us, who pervert the grace of our God into sensuality. They're sly, they're ungodly. They have no restraint. They deny, but they also, we see here in God's word, they defile the flesh.
Yeah, what do you reckon you call it when you have sex with a minor child? Reckon that's defiling the flesh? Hey, I bet I know how he votes. Mm-hmm. It never stops. Yeah, well, you went there, Brother Deacon. Restraint? You mean that S&M stuff? Well, yeah. Yeah. And on the one hand, we have the case of a good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Christian mama, Tatiana Elena Fusari and Seth Michael Welch, were charged with felony murder and first-degree child abuse because they just let their daughter Mary die a horrible death at 10 months old. She was malnourished and dehydrated, and they did nothing about it. They said, well, you know, we got a religious right not to take our child to the doctor. In the Bible, it says that good food is our medicine. We fed her. You know, don't take medical advice from people who didn't know why it rains. We fed her. We were feeding her chicken and potatoes and apples and cheese, 10 months old. I bet you Agnes is hearing me right now and having a plum conniption. We were giving her the good stuff. She died. It's a tragedy. The Lord giveth, the Lord taketh away. Poor little thing hadn't been fed in days. Gained 1 pound in the 10 months that she was on this planet. So, Seth is off to prison for life without. And last Thursday, Tatiana was found guilty of first-degree murder and first-degree child abuse. They're going to appeal, hoping that maybe they can get it all the way to the Supreme Court, where Justice Handmaid will respect her religious liberty. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's a set of Christian parents who killed their own baby. But check in with a conservative Roman Catholic booger eater blogger by the name of Matt Walsh. Matt Walsh is real upset about Pete Buttigieg and his husband adopting a baby, and then Pete Buttigieg went on paternity leave to care for their adopted twins. This did not sit well with a good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Roman Catholic Christian Matt Walsh.
Last week, as we discussed on the show, it was revealed that Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg has been on paternity leave for 2 months after adopting twins with his husband. While he was gone, the nation descended into a supply chain crisis with cargo ships log jammed in U.S. ports and store shelves empty. As we head into the holiday season, Buttigieg decided that would be a good time to take an 8-week paid vacation. Now, let's be very careful here not to suggest... 8-week paid vacation.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe they should have just let them little twins starve to death like that Christian lady done did, Matt.
That the situation would be better if Buttigieg was around. It wouldn't be. He's incompetent and useless and unqualified for every job he's ever had. Even if he was around, he'd only be staring at the problem impotently, or else he'd be dutifully working to make it worse.
Impotently.
So nobody is begging Buttigieg to come back to work and save us.
So let's be clear. Matt Walsh is thinking about Pete Buttigieg's junk. Can't help himself, I guess.
We're merely pointing out that, in principle, the guy who heads up the Department of Transportation should not disappear for 2 months while the country faces the worst transportation-related crisis in decades.
So, am I to understand that because Pete Buttigieg and his husband adopted twins who desperately needed a parent or parents, that caused the supply chain, that caused the ships to be unable to offload at the port of L.A.? What? This is some Bible-based reasoning. Behold, lo, verily.
Crisis or no crisis, though, it's absurd for any public employee, paid on taxpayer dime, to be given that much time off.
Really? Absurd. Dude, did you happen to notice how much time off your God Emperor Nitwit Nero took?
Now, you can make an argument for women on maternity leave, but not for men.
No, men are supposed to deposit the sperm and help make the baby and then walk away and not have anything to do with them. I mean, that's manly. That's some good, fine. I mean, it was good. It was good enough for Matt Walsh's daddy, and look how Matt Walsh turned out.
Maternity leave is a nice luxury for private companies that can afford it. The U.S. government is not a private company. It's a public institution deeply in debt, failing in just about every way and everywhere. So this is not a time and not the place for those kinds of luxuries.
Luxuries. Children being cared for by their parents is a luxury, according to this conservative Christian.
But that's the somewhat safer point to make, right? You are in a much more hazardous place. You are in more hazardous waters when you go away from that, and instead you start saying mildly critical things about paternity leave in general as a concept. And that's what I discovered when I tweeted this on Friday. I said, the thing about paternity leave is that there isn't much for dad to do when the baby is a newborn, especially if mom is breastfeeding. His main role is to take care of mom as she recovers, but of course, that doesn't apply to Buttigieg, so I'm not sure why he needs paternity leave at all.
Right, because people who are caregiving who aren't in heterosexual relationships don't need care in their own right. Wow. This guy's breathtakingly stupid.
That's what I said. And that was enough to provoke 3 days of sustained outrage. Here's yet another thing that you could say to almost any group of people in real life, and everybody would just nod their heads. But if you make the same common sense observation in front of the left-wing internet rage mob, they'll be sent into demonic, vomitous spasms. So over the weekend, thousands and thousands of people, many of them verified accounts, media personalities and so on, have fluttered around screeching like bats, yelling at me that I'm a deadbeat dad, I'm a terrible husband, I'm a sexist, I'm a monster, I'm a supervillain. How dare you? How could you? Wait, what are we mad about again?
No, wait. I don't think he's a supervillain. Supervillains are usually too smart for their own good. This guy's a doofus.
And yet, amid all of the howling and squawking, none of these shrieking banshees have bothered to explain how or why I was actually wrong about what I said. Notice, I did not...
Well, we kind of have, though, haven't we? Yes.
...not say that nobody should ever have any kind of paternity leave. If you work for a private company, they can do what they want. I took off 3 or 4 days for my kids. If you want to call that paternity leave, that's fine. I also didn't say that there's nothing at all for a man to do for his family after a child is born. I said that as far as caring for the newborn himself, most of that is going to be done by the mother.
Then that's bullshit. At least in, oh, I don't know, semi-enlightened cultures. Right? Well, this guy would have been equally good on Titanic Tuesday, wouldn't he? Because this is a Titanic intellect.
She, in most cases, will be feeding the child. The child also needs and wants his mother's presence, his mother's touch, her voice. The father should be interacting with the baby also.
Notice the baby is a boy. He. Not much to say about little girl babies, I guess.
Obviously, but the infant is far more focused on his mother at that age and needs his mother more.
His.
There is no mother in the Buttigieg household, but that doesn't change the point here. Babies need their mothers, which is why two men shouldn't be allowed to adopt babies in the first place.
Aha!
And the outrage mob can now start a secondary campaign over that comment.
Outrage mob? How about the intelligent mob? How about the mob with two brain cells to rub together, which is two more brain cells than this dude apparently has? You know, we've got a guy like this here in our county. His name's Tom Fast. I think I've mentioned him in the past. Guy's a lawyer. He actually sits in the West Virginia House of Delegates. He's about as useless as a screen door on a submarine. But a few years back, there was a couple, two women, and they had a particular skill of being able to take care of at-risk newborns. And a sick newborn is a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week job. Just trying to let them survive, help them to survive, to take them from crisis into thriving. But these two women were a couple who loved each other very, very much. And they took a newborn into their home who was in crisis, sick, needed every minute of every day of the attention of these two loving women. And Tom Fast heard about it and went to war. Not on behalf of the child, certainly not on behalf of the women. He went to war against them all. Because he, Matt Walsh here, believed the most dangerous word in the English language. Believed that no newborn should be cared for by lesbians. And he harangued them, tormented them, used the power of his law license to torture them, until finally the Supreme Court of the state of West Virginia, the Supreme Court of Appeals, finally had to tell him, stop it! Because he did not have the common human decency to do so. Oh, did I mention that Tom Fast is pro-life? Horseshit. Yeah, then the guy we're listening to right now is a genuine Lulu. A note coming in from Jack in Shreveport. Preacher idiot. This Walsh guy that's shrieking like a banshee himself about Secretary Pete taking time to pursue his own family values will almost certainly dive into the black fathers not present in their sons' lives when he feels inclined to get his racism on if he's not too busy getting his anti-LGBT on. And back to the demon clones with Stella Emanuel. Wow. Ralph says, demon clones, just a few syllables away from Democrats. I'm sure that's how she was working it, Ralph. Yeah. Brother Deacon Asa says, can we get a pool going for when we think Matt Walsh here is going to be caught in an airport bathroom stall tapping his toes? Well, you know, the operative word is caught. Come on, Matt Walsh, Asa says. You ain't fooling anybody. You're just jealous because you want a man in your mouth. That's what he's going to be caught with in the bathroom stall, Brother Deacon. But you know that.
But I'll say it again. Two men should not be allowed to adopt babies. Because babies need mothers.
Because men, grunting, hooting, barking, grunt, men need to be out in the woods and chasing down bears and there. Fighting off wild mastodons, and runt and og and norg, and men.
Yeah. It's not mine.
They also need fathers, which is why two women shouldn't be allowed either.
Ah, well, okay, there's what I was talking about a minute ago.
But in a normal situation, there is a mom and a dad.
Ah, that's normal. Normal's only a setting on a dryer.
And in those early stages, the mom is the star of the show, as far as the baby is concerned. The dad plays more of an auxiliary role. Post-birth, as I said, his most important role is to care for his wife, who has just performed the physically taxing act of childbirth. There's nothing controversial about this, or there shouldn't be.
Such authority he speaks with, the physically taxing act of childbirth. I would love to see this guy alone in a room with, I don't know, Agnes for 5 minutes. You up for that, honey? Nothing. On and on and on, round and round we go. Yeah. Oh, and we had the story of Pastor Brother Minister Kroll a minute ago. Oh, and thank you. Thank you, non-billable Rick. Thank you for jumping in. That's tremendous. We have met. We have met Charlene's welcome back challenge. And so that means we are down to, Billable Rick took us down to 940 and then added a little bit in. And we're actually under $900 for the first time in a long time. We are down to, 875. Thank you, non-billable Rick. Thank you. Thank you so much. 875. So that's not quite three program. That means we're finished with last week, and we've started. We're $25 into last Monday. That's fantastic. Meanwhile, Cynthia in the Bay Area says, "That jerk doth protest too much, methinks." Of course, that quote fits all of the pigs you've talked about. Shakespeare was great, wasn't he? Gets right to the point. Doth protest too much. Yeah, it's bullshit. B-U-L-L with a capital B. That's bullshit. I'm not going to change part. No. But anyway, back to the servants of Christ. Jason Greathouse was 24 years old when he moved into a home of a family that had a 14-year-old girl. He was a young preacher, and he raped that 14-year-old girl, got her pregnant, and her parents then made him marry the little girl. No kidding. A year later, they got a divorce. And then last year, having grown up and having the ability to do so, went to the authorities and told them all about the rape. And he was arrested and charged. And he was looking at 20 years hard time in the Alabama prison system. But there's always but, isn't there? He's a Christian. So his lawyers negotiated a plea deal with the prosecuting attorneys. And this rapist doesn't have to register as a sex offender. Has to have 2 years of unsupervised probation. And will do precisely 0 seconds even in prison. In Coffee County, Alabama, the district attorney is Tom Anderson. And he said, well, there were extenuating circumstances that would have been allowed to be presented by the defense that very likely could have resulted in a mistrial or even a not guilty by jury nullification. In other words, the court was going to let the defense probably put forward a claim that the 14-year-old, incapable of consent by reason of age, wanted it. And you see, there are now issues pertaining to custody visitation that the defense would argue are the motivation for reporting the alleged rape many years later. Little girl had to live with, and still has to live with, her rape and her rapist's baby. the little girl, 14 at the time, is 27 now. The baby is no longer a baby. And she knows. The child knows the story of how she came into this world. My God, what trauma must attend that? What nightmare must it be to live with it every day and then have the court say, yeah, it's okay. And there's another bad actor here too, and that is WTVY TV, who said that it was that what happened between the rapist and his victim was a relationship, and went on to advance the rapist's claim that it was a consensual sexual relationship. When the law itself says that the child was unable to consent by reason of age. Statutory rape is statutory rape. And it is statutory because the statute defines it and says that this is the law, and the law is that a 14-year-old, no matter how much they claim to consent, cannot consent. Good God. Ain't God good? I know. And then, of course, because it's been kind of a right-wing nut job kind of program. By the way, if you'd like to engage in some conversation, you're more than welcome so to do. Jump in on the stress line, 844-843-4676. Or, if you prefer, Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. That's how that happens. And we'll get you into the conversation, lickety-split. And I promise I will not let a call on the stress line go unanswered. Promise, 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 promise. So now we go to young Madison Cawthorn, the liar. Lied about getting into a service academy. Lied about how he came to be paralyzed. And he's kind of got an incel vibe going for him. And so he was invited to a men's event at some local gospel shop. To talk about manly men. When he showed up to talk there, because they invited him, and I'm sure they paid him a little honorarium, right? And he says that, you know, the sissy liberals in America are out to make men not be men no more. Because God knows, you know, if you think equality and equity are important, you know, that makes you one of them sissy men. So he has a solution.
Our culture today is trying to completely demasculate all of the young men in our culture.
Demasculate? Well, at least he's wearing a jacket. demasculate. You can check me, but I don't think that's a word.
I mean, you can look at the testosterone levels in young men today, and they are lower than throughout all of history. And there's a lot of...
Really? They're lower than the testosterone levels of young men today are lower than all of history. Huh. So during all of history, we've been testing the testosterone levels of men? You know, one of the things that testosterone causes is, you know, acne. And I'm pretty sure that the acne levels for young pubescent males and isn't it's not any lower. The cases are not any less than no. But we're, you know, it's them liberals who are trying to teach the young men not to be so brave and bold and masculine and manly.
Reasons for this that we can get into later. But my friends, they're trying to demasculate the young men in this country because they don't want people who are going to stand up. And so I'm telling you, all of you moms here.
Oh, yeah, did you hear that? The clux of agreement. So he's going to tell the mamas how to be mamas. Mamas, don't let your babies grow up to be cowboys. No, it's not that.
We're going to stand up. And so I'm telling you, all of you moms here, the people who I said were the most vicious in our movement, if you are raising a young man, please raise them to be a monster. Raise.
Yeah, it's the whooping and the cheering that really gives me the chills. Raise them to be a monster. And they're proud of the fact that he tells them that the women in the maggot movement are the most vicious. Maybe he's right. I mean, look at Marjorie Trader Gangrene Cue Ball out there. Shooting Toyota Priuses loaded up what is it called? Termite? No, I can't remember the name of this. Made it, she blew that Prius all to kingdom come. And looked there at Michelle Fiore. My God, she took out her freedom protector and she blew them beer bottles full of critical race theory and vaccine mandates and voter fraud. She just blew them into a million tiny pieces. Who? Glory, hallelujah. Raise your boys to be monsters. Raise your boys so that they won't take no lip off of their women. Raise them to be manly men who know how to swing a good backhand. You think young Maddie Cawthorn might have some masculinity issues? Maybe. Oh, well, thank you for clearing that up, Matt, in San Francisco. Subject line, cave drawings. The testosterone levels are written on the cave walls next to the hunting drawings. Catch up, girl. I done plum forgot that and the buffaloes and shit. Right there in that cave in Altamira, it says T equals 1,916. That's a lot of testosterone. There's some learning curves out there. Testosterone levels... It drop over time, but at the height of adolescence, it is not unusual for a young man to have testosterone up over 1,000, whatever the unit of measurement is. And it drops as you age. Mine was about 600 before we started suppressing the shit out of that stuff. Felt so good. I got to feel emotions I'd never felt before. Like anything but anger. And more anger. But then again, I'm funny that way. You know, funny. Yeah, Randy Radar says, yeah, because nothing says being a real man like knocking around the little lady a bit. This happened involving two of my male relatives, and there were limited consequences for each. And do let's remember that the Congress of the United States, well, the Republicans in the Congress of the United States, failed and continue to fail to reauthorize the Violence Against Women Act. Because, well, because that might, what's young Maddie's word here? That might demasculate the poor testosterone-starved boys of America. Raise your boys. If you are raising a young man, please raise them to be a monster. Uh-oh! Wait a minute. Let's parse that sentence. Is he talking about non-binary young men? Because he says, if you're raising a young man, singular, please raise them, they, them, to be a monster. Well, I guess monster is part of non-binary. Because it should be, please raise him to be a monster. If you're raising a young man, please raise him to be a monster. Dadgummit, all these new pronouns are just driving me crazy. Yeah, be a monster. Be a waking nightmare for every woman in America. And that's how we'll make America great again and get Jesus to like us better. On and on and on and on. And then, of course, there was the, where did that, oh, what, exactly. Ralph says, Madison Cawthorn says men today are sissies. Oh, well. Then there was the preacher who, it turns out, had had some 10 DUIs who, well, tried to run over some police. We'll just leave that one where it is. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very kindly to Kat. Thank you, Kat, so much. We are now down to $845. $845 to get out of our hole. So we're actually $55 into last Monday. That's wonderful. Thank you. A little bit more. Prayer meeting Wednesday, but it sort of intersects with politics. We've been talking about some about Glenn Youngkin. This is the maggot who's running for governor of Virginia on the Republican ticket. And he can't find enough anti-LGBTQ organizations to snuggle up to because the money is really good. And, of course, his political bandwagon for the upcoming gubernatorial election in November. Basically, he's running a gubernatorial campaign on the backs of the LGBTQ community. And he's been bragging about having been endorsed by the Family Research Council. Mm-hmm. Tony, Norman, yes, Mother Bates, Perkins, its head, and he's been endorsed by what's her name? Penny Nance. She's the head of Concerned Women for America. Yeah, Concerned. And the Virginia Society for Human Life PAC. He's just so proud of what Tony Perkins said about him, because Tony Perkins is so proud of him. And he says Glenn Youngkin understands the values that are important to Virginians, even though a majority of Virginians support legal equality. And a majority of Virginians believe that a woman's constitutional right to determine the workings of her own body need to be protected. Oh, and back to the guy we were talking about last week. Remember Mark Robinson, the highest-ranking Republican office holder in the state of North Carolina, who was spewing vicious hate against the LGBTQ community? Now, he's got a new ally, Bishop Patrick Wooden in North Carolina. And, oh, golly Moses, he is so proud. Patrick Wooden is. He's so proud of Mark Robinson and all of his hate of some of the most marginalized people in the country. Oh, he just loves him. Thinks the world of him. What we need more is more Mark Robinsons. Sure.
Many in North Carolina have lost their minds. We have a tremendous lieutenant governor. Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, a history-making lieutenant governor, the only African-American lieutenant governor in the history of this here great state. And the man is doing a fantastic job. And oh, he's been attacked by these white leftists. They're the greatest racists on the face of the earth.
Wait a minute. One, what is Mark Robinson actually doing? I mean, apart from going around and running his grift, hustling up campaign contributions by hating people he's never even met. And Bishop Wooden here, Bishop Wooden Head, he says that Mark Robinson's being attacked by white leftists. And that that the attacks are racially motivated. Well, let me clear one thing up for you, Bishop Woodenhead. Ethnicity has nothing to do with it. Plain and simple, hate has everything to do with it. And this guy's a hate monger, and Mark Robinson is a hate monger, and I think any decent human being on planet Earth has a duty to call out hate wherever we see it. Because left alone, it festers and grows and becomes pustulent and bursts and spreads the infection all over. Now to be clear, okay, this guy and Mark Robinson would get along great with the Taliban or the noble, puissant, high, gracious, majestic royal family of Saudi Arabia, or dare I say it, the mullahs in Iran. Get along. These guys would get along great with Boko Haram because they all think the same way. They just have a different flavor of fundamentalism.
Ain't nobody, no one is a racist like a white leftist, because they want to promote a program, they want to promote an ideology, they have something that they want to promote, their vision, even at the
come on, you use the phrase, channel your inner Louis Farrakhan, buddy, say white devils, come on, I know you can do it.
Expense of our children. And the lieutenant governor is standing. And I tell you, he's all man. I thank God for him. I thank God.
All man, is he, Bishop Woodenhead? He's all man? You know that how? Been in a room with the lights out with him, have you? Projecting much? Tweaking the little pink tomato nose of the goddess of irony, are you, Bishop?
God for him. And I agree with him 100%.
Yeah, I guess. Oh, thank God. Thank God. Thank God. Mm-hmm. You're right. You're right, Cynthia. That Shakespeare, he was something else. Got right to the point.
I agree with his choice of words. He called what they're trying to do in the public school system with our children filth. I think that filth is almost a euphemism to be used to describe the mind-bending techniques that they are trying to apply to children in their formative years, trying to get boys to see little boys now as girls when the boy changes his mind and decides he wants to be a girl. Wants to be.
Nobody wants to. I mean, I don't mean to put this in anybody's face or anything, but let's just be clear about that. Nobody wants to be. Nobody wants to be diabetic. Nobody wants to be colorblind. Nobody wants to be blind. Nobody wants to be deaf. Nobody wants that gene that makes cilantro taste like soap. Right? Nobody wants to be. Good God, the ignorance is absolutely breathtaking. Now, I'll grant you, Bishop Woodenhead would probably wants to maybe strangle some trans people, but no, nobody wants to be trans. Nobody. No one. At all.
Them that homosexuality, lesbianism, and all these things are clean, pure, normal, and natural. Want to promote in schools these ideas to our children.
Yeah, promote these ideas to our children. That you don't just hate somebody for the sake of hating them. That you don't hate somebody because they're different. Now, it goes without saying that, you know, of course, I don't know. This guy, he's obviously another unicorn. And by that, I mean a black Republican. And maybe he'd be okay if some of these Republicans got their fondest wishes and we could get rid of the 13th Amendment and repeal the Civil Rights Act. Maybe he'd be happy if he had to travel with a green book. Maybe he'd be thrilled if Rosa Parks had never refused to give up her seat. Maybe he'd be happy if there had been no Montgomery bus boycott. Maybe he thinks those three voting rights activists who were buried in an earthen dam in Neshoba County, Mississippi, had it coming. Maybe he does. Maybe he thinks Walgreens lunch counters, well, they don't exist anymore, I don't think. But maybe he thinks that's where the white people deserve to eat, and he needs to place his order at the back. Maybe he thinks George Wallace was right when he said, segregation yesterday, segregation today, and segregation forever. Maybe he thinks that was right. Or maybe he's equality for me, but not for thee.
Well, in their formative years, they want to teach our children things that they know, that once the children are taught, they can't unlearn it.
Because he's got a C coming next. Because you see, you have to be carefully taught to hate. You don't have to teach children not to hate if those children have not been taught first to hate. You don't have to teach children to sling around the vile, vituperative imprecations if they've never learned them in the first place. This bishop has a rainbow flag hanging behind him with Jesus Pride written on it. Well, the concepts of the rainbow flag actually embody more of the teachings of Christ Jesus than does anything, any of the vomitous bilge flowing out of this monstrosity's mouth. Madison Cawthorn there, if you're raising a young man, raise them to be a monster. Well, Mrs. Wooden certainly did. Steve in New York says, you know what I really wanted? I really wanted to be a gay man because I really loved having to keep anything about a boyfriend I was dating quiet because I loved having people assuming I was a pedophile when I taught CCD. Just great times, right? Yeah. See, these people are trying to make other people hate themselves. When all people want to do is live their lives. But if teachers in public schools are having to teach children not to hate, that means they have already been taught to hate at home. Because as a dear public school teacher who has since passed on here, her kids loved him, used to say, it all begins in the home. It all begins in the home. Oh, my. Brother Deacon Asa says, regarding raise them to be a monster, where else have I read that the youth need to be brutal? Is Maddie Cawthorn also a failed art student? You know, we recruit young people into the military at about the age of 18 because those young minds can be deconstructed and reconstructed, and they can be turned into killing machines. And only later in life will they realize what was done to them. More introspection comes with age. And more introspective people are like, no, I don't think I want to go kill anybody. I don't think I want to go kill anybody today. But you can teach young people to do it. Oh, yeah. I agree, Cynthia. Failed art student, Cynthia says, that is so on point. It deserves a cowbell. That's for you, Brother Deacon Asa, as nominated by Sister Cynthia in the Bay Area. Dude's rainbow flag, Jack in Shreveport, says, isn't just the putting the two words Jesus and pride together kind of a fuck up for Bishop, dude? Wasn't pride kind of not one of Jesus's values? Yeah, he was never a... Well put. Well put, Jack. Nicely done. Well done indeed. Well, let's get back to the bishop. There's not going to be anything here about beating the bishop. Now quit that. Although the bishop may... No, Well, never mind. Damn it, quit it. He's got his jacket on.
People know these folk are wicked to the core. They know how the human mind works. They know that there are certain things that you can see that you can't unsee, certain things that you can hear that you can't unhear, and certain things that you can...
Ooh, and the things the bishop sees in his mind and hears in his little noggin and his little wooden head, and he thinks about it all the time. This man spends more time thinking about how people gay people have sex than gay people think about how gay people have right. What was that about beating the bishop?
You could teach certain ideologies, certain agendas that you can teach that can't be untaught. The devil will just hook it into their spirit.
Yeah, the devil. The devil is the father of equality and love and tolerance. I guess the bishop here missed that whole the Good Samaritan parable in the Bible. Because remember, the guy who found dude left for dead in the ditch and picked him up and put him on his donkey and took him to the inn and said, I'll pay the tab and everything. That Samaritan, well, Samaritans were untouchable. Samaritans were unclean. Samaritans were hated. Samaritans were despised by the good God-fearing people. But dude would have been dead without the Samaritan. So yeah. There are devils. But they're not at all from another world or the spiritual realm. They're flesh and blood, and sometimes they call themselves bishops.
And they're coming after our children. Well, I want to thank God that the overwhelming of calls and support that's coming in to our lieutenant governor are overwhelmingly supportive. Don't let the news fool you. People.
Yeah, don't let the facts fool you. People in North Carolina are as hateful as anybody you'd ever want to see. Because Jesus. Yeah, I did see that. I played it without the audio. Yeah. Thank you, Jack. As to the rainbow flag, Steve says, the first social justice thing I ever associated with a rainbow was Jesse Jackson's Rainbow Coalition. Oh, dear, dear Robin, it's not beat the bishop, it's stroke the bishop. Please get it right going forward. You should have seen this in Appendix 2C, Roman numeral 1, Section A, Subsection 3 of the gay, of the LGBTQ agenda. I haven't even gotten past the notes on the second age, Steve. I'm nowhere near the appendix. And I haven't checked the pocket part either.
Well, support our governor. As a matter of fact, I talked to him the other night, and he told me
that... Wait, he just called him the governor.
At the overwhelming majority...
Was that a Freudian slip? I see some lace.
The calls that's coming into his office are supportive. Don't be moved by those losers that they had the other day doing a press conference. Preachers.
Losers. My God, what a Christian he is. Because, you know, that's what Jesus said. Losers. Mm-hmm. But no, some preachers spoke up and that's under that got under the bishop's cassock.
Listen, lesbians and homosexuals wearing turn back collars, attacking the man for telling the truth. There's nothing that the lieutenant governor said that is contrary to the Christian doctrine.
Yeah, it is. Dude, you can't even read Hebrew. Probably can't. I bet you can't read Hebrew, can't read Greek. Has no idea what the Bible actually says. Oh, as to pocket part, did any of the lawyers in the community catch that? Well, they didn't write if they did. Always check the pocket part.
There's nothing that he said that is wrong, and thank God he told me out of his own mouth that a great number of the calls that are coming in, check this out, are from black women. Black.
No, really? He's getting calls from African-American women in being against the LGBTQ community. What a surprise. I mean, I guess we kind of forget that the black church went all in back when California had Proposition Hate. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, Bishop's so happy. He's just so happy because he's getting his hate on. It's so much fun, isn't it?
Parents, black women calling saying, we didn't know that this is what they were trying to do to our children. And those sisters are saying to our Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, stand your ground, man. We're for you. See, Satan means this thing for evil, but God means it for good.
You see how it works? This is how the religious hustle always works. I am speaking for God, the most powerful force in the universe, but has to have somebody do his talking for him. I'm speaking for God. And if you oppose me, you're going to hell. And there are a lot of simple people out there that will buy into that silly horse shit. Yeah, let's check in with something that our pal Tony posted recently. It really did sort of resonate with me. Daggummit. Where'd it go? I'll have it here in a second. Yeah, here it is. Thanks, Tony. God is the abusive boyfriend you would never want your daughter to date. I love you, but you aren't good enough. You're broken. You don't love me enough. You don't do what I tell you to do. But I love you more than anyone. But since you don't love me enough, I'm going to punish you. I've done everything for you, even though you aren't worthy. I'm going to send somebody to die for your shortcomings, but you're really the one who should die. And even after I do, after I do that, you're still not worthy. Oh, and yeah, there's a cancer, disease, poverty, starvation, and a lot of other stuff that I don't do anything about. But I still want you to pray to me and tell me that those things are going on, because as an omnipotent, all-knowing being, I have no clue about your suffering. And if you really pray a lot about it and appear devoted to me, I still won't do anything about it. It's all part of my plan that you can't know anything about. You wouldn't understand it anyway. And when you die, and there's no way to prove it, I'll give you everlasting life. So it's okay. Just keep those checks coming. Who wouldn't believe? Exactly. Dude is selling tickets out of hell and into heaven. And people fall for it because they are scared to death. Because they are scared of death. And most people don't even realize that it's not death they're afraid of. They're afraid of the dying. Way, way, way back on March the 14th of 43 BCE, the conversation around the Caesar family dinner table was, what is the best way to die? Because, you know, those Romans were a merry lot. You almost think that whoever proposed that symposium topic that night might have been in on it. And Julius Caesar answering, you know, some people said, well, you know, no, I don't know, you know, I'd like to die in my sleep, or, you know, it'd be best to, you know, I don't know, die in a warm bath, or, and Caesar got right to the heart of things, and he said, it matter not the manner, as long as it be quick. It's the dying people are afraid of. That's the scary part. Because when you're dead, you're just dead. And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't matter how long you live. However long you live, this planet's going to be here for a few more billion years before the sun goes nova and turns it into a little cinder. And however long you live, you're going to be dead a whole lot longer. You know, one of the first books I saw as a child was a book called God's Graves and Scholars by C.W. Saram. I think it was in translation. And I used to look at the black and white plate in the middle of the book of the mummy of Ramses II unwrapped. And realizing, you know, not for any ghoulish purpose, but just amazed. And thinking about his life. And that's just been the way I am pretty much all my life. And it's fascinating to wonder about lives lived. You know, some people just, in Washington, D.C., for instance, some people just breeze by the White House, and, you know, I mean, maybe you live in Washington, D.C., oh, there's the White House. I can't do that. Or the Capitol. Or any of those other monumental buildings. Because I can't help thinking about the people who made it happen. Same thing with St. Peter's, St. Paul's in London, the pyramids of Egypt or Mesoamerica. Those are human structures. When archaeologists go into an earthen mound, you know, the earthen pyramids that dot much of North America, Eastern North America, you can actually see imprints where individual baskets of dirt were dumped in the building of that mound. And that's one basket carried by one human being. Maybe via a tump line across the forehead and on the back, or maybe carried by handles in front. It matters not. But what matters is the human energy that went into it. The baked clay tablets that were smashed into dust on the floors of museums in Iraq when we attacked that country that never attacked us caused me horrible grief, because I couldn't help thinking about the human being who painstakingly made that wet clay tablet, and then using a sharpened reed pressed triangular shapes into the wet clay to convey an idea. And when it was full, they put it into the kiln and they baked it hard. And some other human being who did not know shit from shinola about it and instead spray-painted Semper Fi, even misspelling Fi, on the walls, didn't give a good goddamn what might have been on that tablet. And then some asshole from the Green family comes along and buys some of the ones that remain up illegally for their Museum of the Bible. And they got busted. Yay! I remember how furious I was when the fucking Taliban dynamited those magnificent Buddhas carved into the very cliff face of Bamiyan in Afghanistan. Because they objected to human images. And they erased the already anonymous lives of the people who carved and chiseled and sweated, and the people who supported them. Those things are literally crimes against humanity, and this bishop is engaged in one too. Because when you deny the common humanity of people and transform them into devils and demons, you expose to the world what a devil and a demon you are in your own right, and how anti-human you essentially are. Cynthia writes and says, speaking of good quotes from Bertrand Russell on why I am not a Christian, quote, do you think that if you were granted omnipotence and omniscience and millions of years to perfect your world, you could produce nothing better than the Ku Klux Klan or the fascists? Cynthia says, I think that speaks volumes. I do too, Cynthia. I do too. Steve says, one question to Bishop what's-his-name and all of his ilk. What if your interpretation of the Bible is wrong? See, they don't even think about that. They know they're right. They are literally convicted in their righteousness, which is to say they are convicted in their hypocrisy. Selling tickets out of hell and into heaven, Steve says, interesting concept that. Didn't Martin Luther complain about the selling of indulgences? Yes, he did. But it's a grift with staying power. It's how religion, it perpetuates itself. Randy Radar says, organized religion is one part good luck charm, two parts fear, and three parts control. The control is the point of it all. Oh, yes. And hey, over on the stress line, we've got Scary Jerry. Hey, Jerry.
You know? Hello, Miss Robin. How you doing?
Oh, I'm just fine as frogs here.
You know, I come from a evangelical background. The biggest stone throwers, and I gotta put that out there on for a meeting Wednesday. And if my family knew, I spent most nights listening in the rapture to a trans woman, they would just shake their head, start getting me asbestos boots for my ride to hell.
Well, when you put it like that,
well, they care about me, but they're really judgy. Let's just and if you're from the South, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Like,
oh, I sure do. Like bless his heart.
So, you know, my dad didn't talk to me for like all months because I stood him up. I go, have you ever met God? He goes, no, because he was trying to tell me how to pray. And I go, I have met Jesus too. And they didn't know what to do with that. Both times under serious psychedelics. Of course, I left that part of the story out. And the deities I met have nothing to do with the deities that these people talk about. There was no judgment. There was no condemnation. It was just galactic levels of love, joy.
It sounds a lot like what Bill Hicks was talking about.
Acceptance. I've never felt so much acceptance in my life. And on both those times, it was too much. But I bought the ticket and took the ride. You know, the funny thing is that Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John, I don't see anything about, you know, burned gays and
abortions. No, it's not there. Not a word.
Take care of the sick, feed the hungry. I was thinking when I was hearing it too, I mean, these guys, because I used to be caught in that enthrall. Both pastors were great speakers. I had to give them credit for that. And I was like, you know, sir, put this much energy into the homeless. Oh, my God. Because, you know, they can make their own new Samaritan story in the new Bible. Because that's who you're supposed to be saving. Not because it's easy, because it's necessary. All of those people are spiritually bereft.
Yeah. People like this bishop, Scary Jerry, you know, they're the living embodiment of sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof.
It's worse than that. They're the building blocks of the Christian fascism that Ellen G. White warned about for us Seventh-day Adventurers. And Mike Malloy jumps up and down about it, even though he stares into the void and doesn't see a God. You know, something's really afoot. He's right. You as well. You're the most one of the most godly women I've met. And I put that up there with my late mother and the late Carolyn. And you're right. Nobody. Yeah, one of the first things David said is, damn it, I wasn't born a girl. Nobody wills that shit.
No.
Something's wrong. And I've never heard you happier. Your whole thought process has changed. You're more empathetic, more sensitive, and it's amazing. And I'm glad you're able to make the changes you want. There's a lot of people out there who just put on a wig and a dress, feel the same way. They don't have the insurance coverage you have. So they got to make do and maybe get their ass kicked in the street. But if you look in their eyes, they're women. I guess that's what I wanted to say.
I think you just really, really put it perfectly. And I am happy. I mean, it's liberation. It's freedom.
You're happy as a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you say you've always been a little girl, I gotta believe it. Kind of like I've always been crazy, and only right now I'm learning to control it and turn it into a positive instead of a negative. Because along with the crazy, I have incredible insight, 340 insight that people don't get. You know, the scariest thing that I want to throw out there, and I'm putting this across the whole Horn family, if you don't believe in it, you know, whatever, just still pay attention. This whole marketing beast thing of the vaccine is starting to really piss me the fuck off.
How so?
Because Seventh-day Adventurers really do believe in a marketing beast, and they're diluting the fuck out of it. Here's a scary thought exercise. I think the Trumper will come around because the whole underworld of this planet, you know, the carbon pollution, the gangster dealing, the authoritarians are making it tough for everybody just so they can get Trump back. It's kind of creepy. The Saudis aren't pumping oil. The Russians aren't pumping gas. This is all, this difficulty is on purpose. Just so they go, oh, look, yo, Joe Biden's incompetent. What the fuck are you talking about? Joe Biden's one of the most competent presidents I've ever seen in my lifetime.
Yeah. This manufactured, they have no creativity, the maggots. And so what they're doing is they're just repurposing everything that was true about Nitwit Nero. Demonstrably, factually, documentably true about Nitwit Nero, they've just repurposed and veneered onto Joe Biden. Because they are doing the bidding of their master, Sleepy Joe Biden.
He's not. He's they gave him several steaming bags of shit, and he's turned it into a hat trick. I'm kind of impressed. I think he should have been president 20 years ago. I really do.
Yeah, or maybe, I don't know, maybe he needed the 20 years to grow. Because he seems to be a person who has continued, and you know, that's really the point of being here, I think you'll agree. You know, we are not static, okay? Else we'd all be the same birth weight we were. We'd all be 21, 24 inches long, whatever. And we'd never change. This whole planet is nothing but change.
Cycles and cycles of changes.
Yeah. And the thing is, if you don't change, all you are doing is willfully building your own prison.
All right, I'm on the bus. Go ahead.
No, it's okay.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm right here. It's just, but that's so true. And I think, you know, I think the course of his life was to put him here. In this moment. And the lunacy of that one wackadoodle-doo, well, you know, if Pete Buttigieg wasn't out there taking care of them damn kids, you know, and instead of the children being cared for by a mama and not two lesbians, damn it, well, we wouldn't have these supply chain problems. You stupid. Mm.
We've had supply chain problems for a year because somebody screwed up a pandemic.
Well, I'll go so far as to say, though, if you go back somewhere in the archives of this program, you'll find us having a conversation, somebody and me, about what was called just in time transportation.
Yeah,
where
that's
stores
the
don't
that happened in the 80s.
Yeah, where stores went from having inventories to not having inventories. And relying on an incredibly fragile transportation system to make sure that shit got to market. And they thought nothing would, you know, what could possibly go wrong? Well, we're finding out.
The guy who decided to send anything 13,000 miles away to put a sticker on it so it can come back, that person needs a bitch slap.
Yeah.
Because that's the problem right now. I mean, we cut, and I was shocked to find out we don't have a. I thought Texas Instruments still made a microprocessor. Nope, they don't. Nobody does. So when people go, you know, we need to go out there and show the Chinese what's what. I'm like, okay. So where are we going to get our parts next week?
Because we're going to be riding bamboo and coconut bicycles. Right.
We can't fight the Chinese. Get over yourself. They won. Especially if they get the Africans on their side. You don't want none of that smoke, man. You don't.
Wait a minute. Okay. Yeah, you get that, yeah. But you're right.
And that's the situation we're in. It'll take us 30 years to build out. And I do think the biggest problem we have right now is fucking Joe Manchin. I can't, you know?
I know.
With a hypothetical sniper, I'm running out of bullets. Because Joe Manchin has held the whole country back for 40 years because specifically he doesn't sound like a crazy person. He sounds reasonable.
Well, he sounds like the more or less nice guy that he is. He's just wrong. He has been miseducated.
I don't think he's a nice guy when you guys are number 50 in infrastructure. I just found that out today. I was like, really?
Well, no, I mean, nice is not the same thing as competent.
Or good.
Yeah, or good.
I mean,
I keep trying to hammer this concept home, you know, that, you know, no Manchin ever does anything that doesn't benefit somebody named Manchin. That's not me trying to be cute. It's a fucking fact. It's demonstrable. There's empirical evidence to support it. I mean, he'll do things, for instance, that inure to the benefit of the coal and gas industry. But there, at the bottom line, it always benefits him.
Does a hurricane need to go over his house? I mean, if you look at hurricanes go after power sources and drilling pretty consistently.
Funny that.
The planet is alive. Those storms are alive. I mean, we have a flood or an earthquake or a tornado planet-wide now every day. But they're sticking their fingers in the ears and they're going, no, it's not happening. I don't get it, man. We didn't get hit by anything
Well, I mean, there's a simple answer. I don't think it's the wrong answer. The reason they continue to not get it is because the checks keep clearing.
Yeah, but it's all starting to fly apart now. You can see it.
Yeah.
We can't even pretend anymore. You couldn't really pretend after 1992, which I think was the first layer of
Was that Andrew?
That was Andrew, the 200-mile-an-hour hurricane that they lied about. Called it a Category 4.
That scrubbed South Florida clean.
Or 2005. Or 2020. 2020 was up there too. Or 2021.
Yeah, see, Sparky sent me something earlier this afternoon, or earlier today, rather. It was 4.03 a.m. And Sparky said, and how many years have you been telling us this? How to grift a nation in four steps. One, Manchin's daughter hiked EpiPen price by 400%. Two, Manchin's wife took over the National Association of State Boards of Education and mandated EpiPens in schools. Three, Manchin voted for law that mandates public school EpiPen supplies. Four, family makes tons of money.
How much when is enough enough, though? You know?
The word does not exist in his vocabulary.
And they said in Wall Street, you know, how many cars can you buy? How many houses? How many boats?
Right, but see, there's a psychological phenomenon, Jerry. And I think
I was shocked that a landlocked senator had a fucking yacht. I was like, get the, but this is peak idiocy. A landlocked senator has a yacht. How does he even explain that to anybody? A nice yacht, not a boat. That was a yacht. I mean, so I know yachts.
But you know what? It's a nice yacht. I mean, it's a nice houseboat. Maybe he read the Travis McGee series by John D. McDonald and always wanted his own busted flush. I could understand that. Sounds like a great place to live.
I had a pack, I would just run that until everybody's thinking, why does a landlocked senator have a yacht? How does a landlocked senator get a yacht?
Wait, you know what that is, Jerry? That's the same thing as what does God need with a starship?
It's the exact same thing.
Yeah, without a doubt, and see, but I know probably what his reasoning is. He bought that from a broker in Annapolis for 200 large. He has since insured it for 700 large. You cannot buy that much square footage in a nice house in D.C. for under a couple mil. So. It actually makes economic sense, and I'm sure more senators will be moving on to houseboats.
And how does that serve the big people of West Virginia? I've been to West Virginia. The roads suck.
Yeah, I mean it is an exercise in beauty and poverty that live side by side. But I wanted to mention one thing, Jerry. Sorry, I didn't mean to overtalk.
Go ahead.
There is a phenomenon, and I think it is, I think it's kind of buried. I think it transmits both intellectually and maybe even genetically, or, you know, some sort of Jungian archetype, some kind of buried memory or whatever. Poor people are forever scared to death of being poor, and it is a battle every day. And somewhere back in time, and I want to be generous and charitable here. The Manchins came to America 100 years or so ago with the clothes on their back, and the patriarch and the matriarch busted their asses, dirt ass poor. I lost Jerry, damn it! But it's true, they were dirt poor. And they busted their ass, and they made a little money, and the next generation made a little money. And now it's down to Joe, and I would not be surprised if, you know, it's, I don't know, call it the Scarlett O'Hara syndrome. I will never go hungry again. And so even if he's got $8 million in the bank, and even if he knows that his daughter Heather and his son Joey are set, even if he knows that the grandkids and the great grandkids and kids ungotten and undreamt of are set, they can never have enough money because there's this like genetic memory of how hopelessly dirt damn poor they were. And they never would have gotten on the boat in Italy if they hadn't been dirt goddamn poor in Italy too. Grubbing it out day after day. Creeping and crawling and into some church and lighting some candle in the hope that it might be better someday. And they came here, and they weren't white when they got here. Whiteness is a confirmed, or is a conferred status. There were plenty of signs that said Irish need not apply. Italians keep moving. But there was a place in America that was more than happy to have them. And those were the coal bosses. And the coal bosses got them for cheap. And they wept more when a machine would go bad than when an immigrant would die in some gassy hole, like happened at Monongah in 1907. And I think it tells us something about Joe Manchin's nature that he worked closely with organizations in Italy to put up a monument to the Italians who died at Monongah. Because I think it matters to him. And I think it is a motivating factor that he never, ever, ever, and nobody in his family ever, ever, ever experiences the dirt, poor, scratching poverty that they came from. And every day is an effort to make that memory disappear. Make sure that nobody thinks about the day when the mansions were lower than the dust of the earth. There's a lot of that. There's a lot of that in the American dream. You know, on the one hand, we say, don't forget your roots, don't forget your raisin. When the other side of that coin is every blessed day, doing everything to make sure that nobody ever thinks that you were you and your family were anything but comfortably well off. And so consequently, there's never any such thing as enough. And yet in the end, they're no different from the scrabbling, grabbling, desperate peasants that they came from. Because all the trappings are external. Unless anybody think that I'm being some sort of elitist, I come from the same people, just a different language. We're all, you know, unless you're Fox or Cree or Anishinaabe or Haudenosaunee, Muscogee, Cherokee, Choctaw, Chickasaw, Natchez, Nez Perce, Cheyenne, Apache, Dakota, Lakota, Navajo, Hopi. Unless you're those, you're a colonizer. And you came here scratching and scraping and gouging and digging to do whatever you could to forget the poverty from which you came. Poverty of flesh, poverty of spirit, poverty of material wealth. So I guess we'll call that the end of the program. Thanks, everybody, for jumping in and meeting Charlene's Welcome Home Challenge. Thank you so much. We got down to 8:45. That means we'll be at 11:45 tomorrow. We got a fighting chance. And I can't tell you how critical it is so that this program will still be here when I'm able to do it again. I'm looking forward to that time. By the time I'm able to get back to the microphone, I will be so eager. Agnes will probably have to slow me down. Easy there. Easy there, Trigger. locked in our lodgings today. Made sure there's Wi-Fi. And we're starting to do all the logistical planning that goes with it. Been doing it, but now we're actually putting stuff together. It's getting real, real, real quick. And thank you all for such kind words of encouragement and hope. It means more to me than I can express. No, no, Terrace. Thank you, but no. No saint. Far from it. Not even a low-rent bodhisattva. But yeah, Terrace is right. Projection, Sleepy Joe and his corrupt children. Whatever the maggots accuse us of is something they have already done or plan to do. And there is no more corrupt clan in this country than that gang of Trumps. Not one. So again, thank you. Thank you all. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers, partial sponsors of the program. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. All of you taken together are the reason this program continues to exist. Thank you to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatsoever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Steve in the chat room this evening. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, brand new fresh Malloy on the way in about 40 minutes. Best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is at headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Go by once in a while. Follow Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook. It's something you can do with Facebook that isn't toxic. And please, please reach out to your member of the House of Representatives and ask them. It's just a phone call. Ask them to co-sponsor HR 2073, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. Wouldn't you love to look up when this bill passes? Wouldn't you love to look up and say, I helped make that happen? Because it means the world to Appalachia. It means the future. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. Get your vaccine. Get your booster. We can mix and match boosters now. Yay! Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Take it everywhere you go. And use it after you've touched things. Wear your mask. We can all be part of the solution or part of the problem. And I think this community is pretty well set on being part of the solution. Maintain your social distance. And, you know, for God's sakes, if somebody comes towards you saying, you know, I plan to finish my career here at Busted Knuckle Polytechnic University as a fighting fire ant, avoid that person like the plague. Because he is. Later.